update on the system. Mr. Manconi, whenever you're ready.
I'm going to turn it right over to Mr. Charter, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Thank you very much, John. If you can bring up the presentation, that would be great. Thank you very much, and we'll go straight to the overview slide there. Similar as previous presentations, performance of line one, followed by the rectification plan, bit of discussion on the track remediation work, train wheels, and then I'll turn it over to my colleague, Pat, who will talk about the transit recovery update and COVID-19. Next slide, please. So far, for the month of June, we ended at 97%. That makes us where we've had 10 months in a row where we've been 97% or more in terms of service delivered. 8 months of those were at 98% or over, and so far for the month of June, we're averaging 98%. Go to the next slide, please. Again, daily, what we're seeing as well, so monthly, we're seeing good reliability, same as we were seeing daily as well. We're seeing less variability. It's very consistent. Most days are at that 97% and above, so we're pleased with that as well. Go to the next slide. This showing again, it's very similar. We're seeing good performance, both daily, monthly. Those green bars at the top, just a reminder that we want to see them being, short and small. And that shows that both on a monthly and a daily basis, we're getting consistent service from the rail line. Less and less outliers, good performance, both daily and monthly. Go to the next slide, please. With regards to the rectification plan, as it previously reported, the five main items, switch heaters, catenary system, traction power, doors, and HVAC, it's complete. Still, the fine tuning of the braking systems and the vehicle auxiliary power units, or the CVS units, that work is ongoing. The CVS units one, they're on their last two vehicles there, so that'll be wrapping up shortly. And then, as I've said all along, that all the works associated with the rectification plan are going through that third-party validation to ensure that, it rectifies the problem and it can be sustained. So that work is still ongoing. Next slide, please. We've talked previously at Transit Commission meeting that one of the next pieces of work to do is to do with the track. So we announced earlier this week that we will be doing those temporary service adjustments, which are starting tomorrow. This will allow for RTG to conduct that additional track remediation work in addition to the seasonal maintenance requirements. This is not an annual thing. The work that we're doing right now that RTG is doing over the next couple of weeks is extensive. Last Transit Commission, I showed the machinery that's been brought in. It's here, it's on site. It'll be put onto the rails tomorrow. But it's significant work. We're doing rail grinding and profiling of the entire line, so all 24 kilometers of track, two tracks. They've got up to 800 metric tons of ballast that they'll be adding to the rail line. And so the real big focus is on the track as well. They'll be doing some other seasonal work. They'll be taking advantage of the time, like we've said all along, take advantage of this period of low ridership to do as much as we can. So the work is significant. It's in addition to the seasonal work that we'd be doing every year. But, then the big focus is on the track. In addition to the track work, they'll be installing wayside lubricators at Tunney's Pasture, one of the Herdman curves as well. We'll be finalizing the installation of the sound dampening blocks near Tunney's Pasture. What we anticipate that, after the period of 2 to 3 weeks, once things have, trains have run over the rails and sort of smooth things out a bit more, that the noise and vibration levels will reduce. But it's important to note that, all railroads, there is a degree of noise and vibration, especially on curves. But we are expecting improvements, after a period of time once this work is complete. Next slide, please. Some of the additional work, these are the seasonal requirements, but once again, just trying to leverage the time, the extensive glass cleaning, guideway material cleaning, going through doing more deep cleaning on the stations. There's a variety of track, catenary, and other types of inspections. So once again, there'll be a lot of activity, and it's just about utilizing the time as best possible. So as we communicated earlier this week, last daily rail trips will operate at 7 p.m. with bus replacement service starting at that time and will go until the end of the day. Rail service will resume its normal time each morning. So it'll just we're just impacting the finish time right now. Communications, we've issued the memo, public service announcements, signage will be at stations, and we will have staff roaming about the stations. We don't have the O-Train ambassadors anymore, but we do have a large number of staff that will be out there and supporting our customers during this, during the, these. Next slide, please. Train wheels, you know, the replacement continues, it continues at both sites. The daily inspections on the entire fleet will continue until such time as all the wheels are replaced or have been adjusted. You know, and you know, as we previously stated, that we will continue to cooperate with the TSB investigation, and we're engaging any party that we need, whether it be the chief safety officer, the RMCO, or any other sort of industry experts, and our regulator, Transport Canada. At this point, I'll turn it over to my colleague Pat Scrimger, who will provide an update on transit recovery and COVID-19. Thank you.
Thanks, Troy. Next slide, please, Eric. So ridership in the month of May was at 20% of the usual levels. That's a little higher than it was earlier in the year, but still very low. And that continues to be due to the stay-at-home order. We'll be watching ridership very closely through the month of June and as restrictions continue to lift over the months to come. Next slide, please. So since the beginning of the pandemic, 128 of our co-workers at OC Transpo have tested positive. 120 of those have recovered and are back to work. There's currently 8 who are isolating at home and recovering. And that brings us to the end of the presentation, Mr. Chair. We'll be happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Charter and Mr. Scrimger. First up is Councillor Kavanaugh, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to start off with asking Mr. Scrimger about the COVID. That's a fairly high rate. And I just want to know, do we have any information about how many have been vaccinated now in terms of our frontline workers of OC Transpo? Hopefully they're well on their way and maybe even getting their second vaccinations by now.
Mr. Chair, I don't believe we have that private medical information about individuals, but we know that getting vaccinated was something of great interest to all of our colleagues.
Okay, because they were certainly concerned about being put on the list as priority. So hopefully that's moved along. In terms of, for Mr. Charter, in terms of noise reduction, I'd like to hear a little bit more about what exactly is being done to reduce noise. I want to know that we're well on our way to resolving these issues as we work towards stage two. So can you give me a little more detail? Is it the train or is it the track? Is it the train wheels or is it the track that is the big issue?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, the big focus of the work that's happening over the next couple of weeks is on the track. And it's that interaction between the train wheels and the track. So what they're going to be doing is they're taking, you know, that large piece of machinery that we presented the pictures last Transit Commission, and they are grinding the rail head where the wheel interacts with the track, which will make it a smoother ride, and then that will then reduce the noise and vibration. But it's the track, but it's the interaction between the train wheel and the track. But the big focus right now is on the track and grinding that down and making it a smooth, polished finish so that, you know, that it will reduce the noise and vibration that our customers experience when riding.
Okay. And how do we know this? Is this from, like, what is the, why is it that we're doing it in terms of now as opposed to when we started?
Well, you know, track work, there will always be seasonal track work. There'll always be times in which we'll be doing, you know, this type of rail grinding. This is extensive because we're doing the entire line end to end, and In other years, I would anticipate that we would be doing sections or portions of the line, not the entire track. But this is a regular maintenance that you see all railroads would do from time to time. And you know, we're at that point where we need to do it, and we need to do an extensive amount of it. So we're doing it complete end to end. So it'll get us to a good point. But you know, we will always have, you know, regular and seasonal maintenance but this is extensive, you know, 2 weeks of seven, you know, closing at 7 a.m. This is extensive. This is not the norm. It won't be an annual thing, but you will see in us doing rail grinding from time to time and other types of activities on the track.
Okay. Is there special consideration given to the curves? Because isn't that where most of the noise comes from?
Correct. Yeah. The curves when they're out there with the machinery, the curves will take longer to do. They'll, you know, essentially that machinery will have to take a few more passes in that area. And those are areas in which are prone to more regular wear. And that's something that, you know, RTM and in their ongoing maintenance and seasonal maintenance plans will need to address. So, but yeah, those curves will get more attention. And once again, sort of like all railroads, anytime you have a curve gets more attention than straight track.
Okay. So would they have done anything different if they had known earlier how much noise they'd made? Would it have been a little bit different? Or would we have been able to give them direction for having it a little bit different to make less noise?
I think the seasonal track maintenance, we need to make sure we have a good, solid, robust plan moving forward, which they do. I don't think there would be necessarily any changes in that regard, but we just need to stay. They need to stay at it, and they will. They're going to. It needs to be. You always need to be working on the track. You always need to be making adjustments. You always need to be adjusting for the seasons, and that's what they're doing. And this work gets us to that point where it becomes, you know, seasonal and regular maintenance.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Councillor. Next up is Vice Chair Cloutier, please.
Thank you, Chair. Merci. Thank you, Mr. Charter and Mr. Scrimger, for the presentation. Just picking up on Commissioner Kavanaugh's question, let me ask it a little bit differently. You know, the line has been open for 2 years, a little bit less than 2 years. Is this maintenance or is this rectification of an issue at installation, the work that we'll see?
That's a good question, Mr. Chair. I wouldn't say it's correction of work at installation. We did identify through the ongoing assessments that we've been doing that there is, there was some challenge. There were some areas for improvement with regards to the track. Noise and vibration being one, specifically at the Herdman curves, one of the curves heading into and out of Searville Station. We identified that, you know, that the noise, the vibration, and, you know, the track required some additional attention. We identified that through that the process that we've been going through with the rectification plan. It wasn't one of the original major items, but as we were doing our assessments, we identified some additional areas of focus. Track was one of those additional areas of focus that we identified from. So this gets us back to sort of a more level state, baseline it. And then, you know, then it becomes the maintenance, the ongoing maintenance and the seasonal adjustments at that point. So it gets us back to that base level where we should be at the point where we launched.
Thank you, Mr. Charter. Can you confirm that RTG is paying for this maintenance or rectification work? Is this entirely on RTG?
Good question. Yes, it is, Mr. Chair. It is 100% at their cost. They're responsible to maintain the track, the train, the system for the life of 30 years. So this is at their expense. Yes, it is.
Okay, thank you. Just a couple more. I imagine a lot of systems, a lot of transit systems, as you've said in the past, are operating below capacity in North America. How were we able to get this equipment, which I think from the last meeting you said is very much in demand with respect to track rectification and grinding. I don't know the exact verb. We were able to get this equipment in Ottawa for the next couple of weeks. Was that?
Yes, Mr. Chair. There are a few companies that provide these services, and they have their equipment, and they travel North America, and you know, some, you know, obviously there would be similar companies in you know, Europe and other countries. But this type of work, it needs to be planned. And when it comes to rail lines, you always need to be looking at a season or two ahead, and you need to be planning for a season or two ahead. So, for example, in the next couple of weeks, we're going to be talking about winter operations and planning for the winter. This work was planned months and months ago, and that's how they were able to secure the equipment. But there are options to be able to secure the equipment. There's the large machinery that we're using this time. There's also smaller pieces of machinery that can be more localized. But it's about planning and being proactive.
Okay, thank you. Last question, Mr. Chair, to Mr. Charter. You mentioned a number, and I'm not sure what this number is, 800 metric tons of ballast that we are adding. Is that a lot? What is it for? Again, is that maintenance or is that rectification? Can you give us a little context for that?
Sure I can. Yeah, and I apologize for that. So the ballast is essentially the rock that you put around the rail ties that holds everything in place. And the 800 metric tons is a significant amount. They've got 400 metric tons here, and then they got another 400 on standby to pull in when they need it. This is building up in certain locations. They're going to build up the shoulders around where those rail ties are, and it will provide more it'll provide increased stability, and it'll help with the seasonal fluctuations that we deal with here in Ottawa. The expanding in the summer and the contracting in the winter, it'll help stabilize that. So that was one of the areas that was identified as an area in which they needed to make some improvements upon to get to a more stable state on the track side of things.
And we would qualify that as a rectification rather than maintenance, or?
At this point, yes, I would classify that as rectification, but with the caveat being, every year we will probably be adding not 800 metric tons. We will be adding, ballast and these rocks at certain locations from time to time. That would be part of the normal ongoing maintenance moving forward. Yes.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Charter, Mr. Scrimger, Mr. Manconi, thank you to you and your team for keeping our city moving throughout the pandemic. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Next up is Commissioner Wright Gilbert, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Apparently, the Vice Chair and I are sharing one mind today because all of his questions were on my list. So I only have a few, which, is great. So with respect to the independent assessment that is being done of the rectification plan, when is this assessment going to be completed?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I don't have the date when that will be completed. I know that it's actively ongoing, I don't know a specific end date for that.
Okay, let me ask it this way: the rectification plan, I assume, has a deadline for all works that need to be done, correct?
With the rectification plan, we wanted the work done as soon as possible. We have identified timelines for that. As I said, I don't know right now when that all that work would be complete.
Okay, so we don't know when the rectification work is going to be complete. And as a result, we don't know when the independent assessment is going to be complete assessing that work. Okay, that's good information to have. The report that's being completed by the independent assessor, is that going to be shared with Transit Commission?
Mr. Chair, we're going to, once we receive the final report, we'll run it by legal counsel, and depending on how that rectification report is going to be used, and those of you that were briefed in camera were privy to that, we will determine where that report goes, given both the advice of the city clerk, the city solicitor, and our external counsel. So I don't have an answer for the commissioner at this point. The report is progressing, and as Troy said, we want the rectification done as quickly as possible. I would suspect if there is a briefing, it would be to counsel in camera vis-a-vis the other issues that we've been discussing.
Well, I understand that obviously there are other issues outstanding, specifically legal issues when it comes to RTG. I'd just like to remind Mr. Manconi and others, that there are four members of this transit commission that do not sit on council that should be privy to the information with respect to the rectification plan in terms of the assessment. And so while the majority of the members of this transit commission do sit on council and would therefore have the information, I think it would be only fair in the sense and spirit of transparency that the other transit commissioners, i.e. myself and the other three citizen transit commissioners, do have access to this report as well. Otherwise, we are not then equal members of this commission. So I'd just like that to be taken as food for thought in terms of your considerations as to who to share this report with. I will move on. The Blair platform upgrades, I've had a couple of people ask me, and I said I would ask today, with respect to shelter space and making sure that the traffic, i.e. humans, can move around the shelters, but also have enough place, enough room to distance and shelter in the shelters. What is the status of the Blair platform upgrades?
Those projects, Mr. Chair, are ongoing. As you know, they were budget for them was approved by council in the capital budget, and engineering and procurement is continuing, and we'll be able to let you know when a contract's in place for the construction.
Okay, so there's been no work yet because we're in procurement stage and the work has not started yet on the upgrades or improvements, then, is what you're saying.
Mr. Chair, the physical work has not yet started. The engineering and procurement work is well along.
Okay. So just keeping in mind that, you know, as more and more people get vaccinated, their first dose, their second dose, and as the province reopens, people are going to start using public transit, I hope, you know, more and more to get back into their offices, go do their daily tasks. And so as the volume of humans at these transit stations increases, it would be prudent for us to ensure that, you know, these kinds of works that are going to improve our transit stations and allow for people to still maybe distance a bit because not everyone's vaccinated, you know, it would be prudent for us to ensure that those are completed. So you don't have a timeline at the moment in terms of do we have a date that we're looking to hit in terms of getting these changes done? Like, do we have a project plan? I know we're in procurement, but I assume that there's a date that we are looking to hit to have these things done.
Mr. Chair, of course, we agree entirely with the need to get these in place and also to get them designed properly and procured according to the city's procurement bylaw. When we have a date, we'll be sure to share it.
Okay, so the answer to my question is no, we don't have a date. Okay. The last question I have is everyone's favorite controversial topic, the odors in our tunnel downtown. I've been getting a lot of correspondence from stakeholders, from riders who are still very concerned about the offensive odors. Don't think I need to describe them for everyone, in the LRT tunnel downtown. So I'd like to hear if there's an update on finding the source and what the rectification has been done since we've been talking about these odors for 2 years now.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, with regards to the odors in the tunnels, you know, RTG continues to do their, if you recall, we talked here, their requirement to do a monthly inspections, but you know, they do an assessment. They haven't been able to identify a root cause for Parliament. With regards to Rideau Station, it is believed that the smell stems from, you know, the water and the limestone in the area. It does seem to fluctuate significantly. There's days in which there is an odor present, and then there's many days in which there's not. You know, they are working through a variety of you know, as they're working on the tunnel, there's some areas in which there's been some water that's been leaching a little bit, and they've been plugging those and closing them off. It is anticipated that it may subside over time, but at this point, they haven't been able to determine the root cause for Parliament, but it is ongoing, and there are assessments that continue on a monthly basis to try to identify that root cause and ultimately to see if they can stop that odor from occurring.
So I wasn't fair in my initial question. I said 2 years we've been talking about it. We've actually been talking about it since September, so the opening of the LRT, which is about 18 months, I think, or a bit more. 18 months is a long time to, number one, subject our customers to incredibly foul odors. And number two, to me, not an engineer, totally understand I'm not an engineer and I'm not a rail expert and I'm not a tunnel expert. And I'm not an odor expert. But here's what I'm saying. Nearly 2 years to find a root cause of an odor, to me, is unacceptable. This is a customer experience issue. And if we want to try to lure customers back to our transit system, which I think we can all agree we want to do that, we have to do that. We don't have a choice. We, in order to run our transit system, we need customers on it to pay for it. If part of our transit system smells like, I'm just going to say it, feces and rotten eggs, that's not a good customer experience. And so I would encourage RTG, if any of them are listening, to get a move on with the root cause analysis, because 18 months of root cause analysis is a very long time. So if there's anything that you know staff can do to encourage RTG to get a wiggle on this, I think that, you know, that would be prudent, because it is a customer experience issue. And quite honestly, it's just disgusting.
It's time.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. I just want to follow up on one of the responses you got there with Mr. Scrimger. Pat, part of the procurement process often includes the date, correct? Where companies will, once the contract is getting negotiated, that's when the dates get solidified. Because sometimes we get a better price if we wait a little longer. Those kinds of factors kick in. So is that correct in your experience? A lot of the contracts don't have the dates ahead of time. We have a nice to have date, but the actual date takes place when the contract gets finalized.
Right, Mr. Chair, that's right in general. One of there's a lot of work before the final construction, fabrication and construction and installation contract. There's engineering work that needed to be done to design the shelter in the way that we've agreed, based on feedback from customers and as we agreed with the councillors would be the general configuration. It's not an off the shelf canopy. It needs to be designed properly from a structural engineering point of view. That's part of the work. There's specialized fabricators for this. So though the engineering procurement does continue, there's a lot of variables, and it would be wrong for me to suggest to our customers that we have a firm date that we just don't have yet.
Okay, thank you. Next up is Councillor Brockington, please.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning, everyone. First of all, thank you for the report and update. I've been taking the trains more frequently than I did during the winter, and I just want to say every experience I have continues to be positive. The trains are prompt, whether it's at rush hour or for weekend travels. The trains are clean, the stations are clean, and the air conditioning feels great. I remember writing to Mr. Manconi last year that the air conditioning on the trains is really good. So far, everything's been great, and the performance data looks great for our trains, so thank you. Mr. Charter, just on the list of the rectification plan, just to get it off my list, the switch heaters more or less were fixed beginning or just after the start of the last winter. They all went through a full winter season, and that issue has been fixed. Is that correct?
That is correct. We had a very, very good winter with the switch heaters. All the work was complete. I think it was the first weekend in December. There is some final remediation work of the area, removal of the propane tanks, that type of work. But the ones that were converted over to gas have been, and the other ones were enhanced with that heat tracing, that sort of stuff. So that work is complete, yes.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you for that. Mr. Scrimger, the bus stats are low as far as ridership. Obviously, with the lockdown that's now been lifted, it hasn't helped our cause. We estimated in the 2021 budget an average ridership for the year at about 70%. So we're now coming to the end of the first half of this year. Have you revised your estimates for the second half? Talk to us about what you think will happen with ridership now that the lockdown's been lifted. People are going to get out more. Bars and restaurants are opening up. Hopefully the museums, as far as phase three, will get more people out. But what do our ridership numbers or estimates look like for the second half of 2021?
Mr. Chair, we're ready for a range of results depending on the public health environment, depending on what our customers decide, depending on what their employers and the other destinations they're traveling to decide. At the time we set the budget, coming up, you know, close to a year ago, maybe it's certainly more than 6 months ago when this budget was being set, we didn't know that there would be a second wave, let alone a third wave. We didn't know how, what balance between unbridled optimism and, you know, doom-laden pessimism to look forward. So we're ready to adapt to a range of possibilities. It would have, you know, I think at the time we quoted those numbers that were in the budget that we were building this year on, we had anchored them on the idea that ridership would start to grow sort of linearly, returning from wherever it was, which was about 30% at the time, returning up towards full ridership in a straight line over the rest of the year, starting from April, I think we said. Well, vaccinations aren't going to be completed by the end of April. We're watching to see once the vaccinations are complete. Maybe that's the end of the summer. Maybe that's when ridership starts to return in greater number. I imagine it'll be starting to return. I imagine it already has started to return. We should fairly quickly get up to the 30% numbers that we were at last summer. And then we should grow to, you know, 50, 70, 90% as more and more activities return to the way they were before, or to their new, people's new travel choices. It completely remains to be seen. And as we watch across the world, there's different experiences in all sorts of cities, in all sorts of countries, depending on how their experiences has been. We've been looking at what they've been doing in New Zealand. We've been watching the numbers from Israel, both of whom avoided some of what we've had recently. But we're, as you know, Canada's now very high on the list of vaccination rates, at least for first vaccination. And that will perhaps put us into some territory that other cities aren't yet. On the other hand, we have a very office-based economy here. So there is more opportunity for people to work from home here in Ottawa than there is in many other cities. And these are things we just have to continue to watch. There's no way of making a prediction. Lots of people are making predictions around the world. There's no way of making a prediction that anyone can be confident in to the point of making a firm statement. We just have to watch and see. We know that the only thing we're in control of, the only things we're in control of, are running a good operation, making sure that it's ready to welcome people back, and when we get to the right time, letting customers know that we're there for them and that we'll do everything that's possible in order to make their travel successful on our system.
Two of our large bubbles of riders are federal government workers, post-secondary students, not exclusive bubbles, but two of our big cohorts. Still no word yet from Ottawa U, Carleton, or the colleges about whether they're coming back, whether you need to come back and be fully vaccinated. This is June. It's still crickets.
Both of the universities have said that they expect to be at 30 to 50% on campus for the fall term.
Have they stated conditions in order to come if you're going to live or take classes in person?
Everything is conditional on public health.
Okay.
colleague, former colleague of mine who works in the federal government has been on a team that surveyed a sample of public servants on their intentions to come back. 50% said they want to work at home. 30% said a hybrid model. 20% said they want to come back in the office. Has the city manager or Mr. Manconi talked with the Public Service Commission on their plans to reintegrate their staff? And if so, when will that happen?
Go ahead.
Hang on, Pat.
Yep.
Chair, we met last week. Mr. Willis, Mr. Kanalakis, Wendy, our treasurer, we met with the federal government, and it's still too early. They're working on it. As you said, Councillor, they're doing all sorts of things, looking at inventorying and looking at surveys and looking at models, looking at what Washington, D.C. is doing and so forth. What we know for certain right now is the universities are at that 30 to 50%, including Algonquin College, which is great news. And we are still waiting to hear officially from the federal government what their plans are, but it's too early to tell. And that answers your question. To me, all the other stuff is secondary. You know, the Red Blacks are coming back. It's great. We're teeing up the service for that. We're going to come forward with the ideas of what our promotional programs will be to entice people back. That's great. We need to know where the federal government stands.
Yeah.
And that's the game changer. And I've instructed my staff, we can do all the predictions in the world, but unless we have that input into the model, we don't know where we're going. And Mr. Kanalakis has been unrelenting in terms of trying to get that for us, but it's still too early to tell.
Okay, thank you. I do think there needs to be communication with our local MPPs that if there are these ongoing decisions not to bring back federal workers in any large volumes, that there are some serious economic impacts to us, loss of transit revenue. And I don't know if we would be unique across the country to ask for federal funding to help bridge that gap, but because so many federal workers live in the NCR and we rely on so many of them to take transit, that loss of transit revenue will continue to impact us for multiple years. So I'm not sure if we can argue that angle, but it has a significant impact.
Councillor, I can tell you that Ms. Stephenson is exactly aligned. I know she's on this call to where you are in terms of our uniqueness as a federal government major employer, and it goes beyond just transit, and that's our position to the federal government. It's also economic recovery for downtown, all those dry cleaning, coffee shops, everything, restaurants. It's a holistic picture, and so when I speak to them, I don't speak to them just from the transit lens. Ms. Stephenson and I speak about, and Mr. Willis, who was fantastic on the call, speak about economic recovery and rejuvenation across. It's not just downtown, it's everywhere. You all have offices in your wards, in just about every ward across the city that has federal government employees. And so absolutely, I see Wendy's on the call, she may want to comment.
Thanks, John. If I may, Councillor, just to add, we do have some certainty to the end of the year. We have funding through the Safe Restart Agreement, which will largely make us whole. And just to add to what Pat was talking about, when I had provided an update at FEDCO around our finances, we know we have a small gap in transit. And when Pat talks about that ridership increasing towards the end of the year, that gap is naturally going to close. So that certainty is there for us for this year. It's just a question of, as you say, what's going to happen into 2022. And those thoughts and those conversations are continuing. And also there's groups who are lobbying for additional help into future years based on not only our situation, but what's happening across the country.
Okay, great. That gap you referenced was about 11 million?
11.2, yes.
Okay. All right, Chair. Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you, Councillor. Next up is Councillor Menard, please.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you for the report today. It's very helpful. I'm mostly here for the e-bus issue, which I'm excited to talk about next, but did want to just jump in on a couple comments or suggestions here. We are seeing during the weeks trains still stopping at various locations. And I'm wondering if we can get more information about why that is. So I'm seeing that the messages, communications go out that a train may be stopped, people are having to switch platforms. I often tweet that out so people know, look, if you're on this train or you're going to be taking the train, this is an issue here. Can you just describe what the issue is, why those trains are stopping, and maybe more information for the public about what we're doing on the rectification side of that?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I mean, like we've mentioned previously, you know, the system won't run perfectly. We know that there will be occurrences where, you know, maybe it's a stop train or maybe it's a medical emergency. You know, we have experienced those. So over the past month, I think there's been five or six occurrences where we've had to do some single tracking. Two of those occasions has been a result of some planned maintenance in which we wanted to get them out there to inspect the track. Those days where we had those high heat, we wanted them to get there, be proactive, check the track, make sure it was okay. You know, so we did some single tracking, and in that time, you know, you impact the customers in that they may have to transfer trains or they may see an increase of commute time by a few minutes. But there's no new trend. There's nothing new. I think we had a vehicle issue one time. We've had, as I said, the planned maintenance where we wanted to do some inspections. We've had a medical emergency. You know, if you go further back, we've even had, you know, situations where we've had, you know, wildlife on the tracks that's caused some disruption. So, but there's no new issue. There's nothing to add to the rectification plan. But, you know, we will have the odd disruption from time to time. But, you know, our goal is to keep service moving, and, you know, keep it moving as much as possible on rail. And if we can't, then use the replacement bus service. But, you know, I'm looking at just some of the data right here. And as I said, I've got five occurrences, and three of them were with regards to planned maintenance and the high heat that we were looking at, and then we had a train issue and a medical situation as well.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful. I think it would be great to have that summary every month or every couple of months, just that you just gave. Because you see them every week, and it may be a technical issue, maybe a passenger issue, and that's helpful to get out there to the public. So maybe, I don't know if you send that around or not, but every couple of months it'd be good to get, okay, we had five stop trains or six stop trains, and here were the reasons why. Is that possible to have something like that sent every couple of months?
You know, we do know the reasons for when we ever have a disruption or a delay. We do have the rationale, the reasons for it. Sometimes the initial indication can change based upon once they've done the investigation, but we do have that information available to us. I take it under the commission's advisement as to what they'd like to report on, like us to report on.
Okay. Maybe I'll just send you an email every couple of months and see if you can send it our way. Thank you for that, Troy. That's very helpful. Regarding transit ridership and Councillor Commissioner Brockington's questions, I'm sorry if I missed the answer. What are we currently at in terms of ridership in the last few months? Did that get answered?
Mr. Chair,
30%?
In the month of May, we were at 40%. Okay. Sorry. That's optimistic. In the month of May, we were at 20% of our normal ridership. Over the months so far this year, we have fluctuated between, I believe, 17 and 21% of our normal ridership.
Okay, that is helpful. I think I just wonder, come the fall, as vaccines continue to roll out, I wonder if we're considering implementing some big measures, some big changes. And I think about, fare free transit to encourage riders to come back, whether that be for a limited time period or not. That's something that, you know, I assume has to be on the table. Is that something we're thinking about come the fall as we're trying to mitigate the issues we're seeing with low ridership?
Everything's on the table. For example, July 1st is no fare. Even though there's no Canada Day, we are going to continue with that. We started work about 2 weeks ago, especially when we started to see the acceleration on the vaccination. We're looking at what other jurisdictions have done. Washington, as an example, which is I always like to use as our comparator. They changed their fare structure because they got fare by distance. We are putting everything on the table, and we will certainly bring forward to the commission ideas and suggestions on how to do all that. Return riders, grow new riders, sustain riders, and some of the changes we did on some of the local routes and so forth. So everything's on the table, and if you have ideas or suggestions, we'd welcome them.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Mr. Maconi. I appreciate that. Okay, thanks so much, Chair. That's it for me. I'll be excited to talk about the next item.
Okay, thank you. And now we'll move on to the next item. I believe that concludes the update on the Confederation Line. So the next item is the zero emission buses. We have a presentation with slides and a delegation. So Mr. Maconi.
Thank you, Chair. I want to just take a few minutes and introduce a couple of slides, and then I'm going to turn over to Mr. Scrimger. It is a lengthy presentation. It's a lengthy report. It needs to be. There's a lot that has gone into this. I'd just wait for the clerk to bring up slide number, the first slide there after the slide two there. Mr. Chair, the UITP, which is the International Public Transit Industry Association, put out a report back in November, which sits on my desk. I read it cover to cover numerous times because it did the best job of talking about the complexity of fleet conversion, irrespective of the fuel source that you choose. And what I like about this slide and the next slide is it talks about, you know, those final words there in the quote is that the way I always like to put it, the bus is the easy part. It's about looking at all the inputs, the operations, the infrastructure, the business models, the finances. And I know some councillors have reached out to me this week and asked some great questions, and I trust we're going to have more today. The deck, along with the report, hopefully gives you a holistic view of everything that we've done in terms of bringing this very significant program to the table. The other piece I wanted to flag for you is that there was a very great team that was assembled both at the executive level and at the technical level. People such as Wendy Stephenson, who was the gatekeeper of the finances and making sure that we were robust and having a sustainable financial model. There was Bryce from Hydro Ottawa, the CEO of Hydro Ottawa, and his team, Adnine, who brought the technical expertise on the complex part of this, which is the infrastructure, the charging, and the backup systems and so forth, which, again, Pat will give you an overview on that. We brought in Ray Mobucci from Deloitte, who's done very complex financial deals, to be the oversight of, you know, how does how do the numbers work and the financial models, which I know people will be asking questions about today. And then our two funding partners, Canada Infrastructure Bank and Infrastructure Canada. The game changer in why our electric buses, long range electric buses, suddenly feasible for us is that the CIB, and I want to give the Canada Infrastructure Bank and their team, Charles Todd, full credit. They did an amazing job of bringing forward the most comprehensive model that says a number of things that we've talked about in the past. How do you fund the premiums associated with the bus? How do you fund the charging infrastructure, which is very costly and complicated? And where are the savings? And what do those savings look like? So they've brought forward a very attractive financing model that, again, when people like Wendy Stephenson and other people, Bryce, who's worked at the federal government, who does financial complicated deals, and Deloitte, they go through and they do a robust review of it, give us the nods. And then Infrastructure Canada with their announcement of how do you fund the transition? And if you can just think about that, the transition of taking almost 1,000 buses that are diesel and moving them to an alternate energy source, think of the complexity of everything from where do you store them? How do you manage them? How do you schedule them? How do you maintain them? How do you train your staff to maintain them and so forth, operate them and so forth. So all of that came together very, very nicely. And hence the reason we're before you today recommending what we're recommending. Before I go to the next slide, I wanna say something that's very important. A reminder that this is a roadmap to this goal that you've established, that the council's established. So we're following your direction. Every year, you will get a check-in on the next year's purchases during the budget process. And I say that because I know I'll be asked some questions about what about hydrogen, which is a zero emission bus opportunity. You know, they're not there yet. They could evolve. You know, will double deckers be available? They're being tested right now. Will articulated buses be available? So you'll have an opportunity as the governing body to check the plan every single year as we do the transition. So the next slide is a graphical representation of all of those building blocks. And it's important that we all remind ourselves of the complexity of this. The vehicle is the easy part. And the industry has done an amazing job of long range buses that will work in our environment, that charge rapidly and so forth. So I'm very proud of the work that the team has done. I wanna thank all our partners and we're happy to answer all your questions. And I'm gonna turn it over to Pat. It's about 30 slides, so I just ask for your indulgence and patience on the information. Thank you, Chair. I'm going to turn over to Mr. Scrimger.
Thanks, John, and thanks, Mr. Chair. And Eric, we'll go to the next slide, please. So we'll start here with just an overview of what we're going to show you and how it ties into the policy background, the policy decisions that Council and the Commission, the policy directions that you've made. Across the top, we see the target reductions for emission reduction from city operations by 2025, getting to a 30% reduction by 2030, getting to a 50% reduction by 2040, getting to a 100% reduction. And that's the target that council has set. Across the bottom of that time chart, you can see the climate change master plan was approved by council in 2020. That leads us to the work we're in right now, where we have that the first zero emission buses coming later this year. You see them there in 2021, developing the fleet conversion plan, which is the report we have before you today. And then over the years from now, over the 15 years that it takes to replace every bus in the fleet, we can get to a full fleet conversion. If it remains financially feasible to do so, we can get there by 2036. And the other policy direction you gave us was to pursue funding opportunities dedicated to transit and environmental initiatives from other levels of government. And that's a big part of what John was talking about and what we'll be showing you more about later in this presentation. Next slide, please. As John mentioned, it's been a big study and we pulled in experts from several organizations. We engaged Dylan for technical reports on technology alternatives. They have expertise to look across the industry and across the country and around the world, both on what's available as energy sources, what's available in the transit industry, and how people are making that transition. And Varie, one of the subsidiaries of Hydro Ottawa, was our experts providing information on energy supply and energy management. Deloitte, as John mentioned, are experts on providing financial analysis looking to make sure that what the federal government and the CIB are offering is aligned with what is laid out in the city's long-term financial plan. We had great help from a number of our colleagues at transit systems across the country. City of Winnipeg was a big help to us because they've gone through an analysis very similar to this in the last few months. And of course, they have a climate which is in many ways similar to Ottawa. And also we're participating as a member of the Canadian Urban Transit Research and Innovation Consortium, or QTRIC, which has been doing a lot of work for several years, helping the transit industry with research and testing in these areas. The next slide, please. So the first thing I mean, there's many, many things we looked at, but as we try to tell the story in a linear fashion, the first thing to talk about is what is the energy source? Right now, the energy source is diesel fuel. So we looked at a number, and we also, once we looked at the energy source, we're looking at what is the right means to get that energy from its supply to the wheels of the bus to move the people down the street. So first of all, we looked at compressed natural gas and renewable natural gas, both of which have the potential to, do have lower emissions, but they're not zero emissions. They don't meet the council policy direction. They don't meet the federal funding eligibility criterion. Hybrid electric buses, as we had for several years. We had them for about 11 or 12 or 13 years. Even the modern ones, they're not recommended because they still are not zero emission. So they don't meet the council policy direction. They don't meet the federal funding eligibility. Trolley buses, which are the buses you'd see in Vancouver, Seattle, San Francisco, and used to be even in Ottawa. We had some in the 50s. Those are electric buses, which use overhead wires to bring the electricity to the bus. They are zero emission, but we're not recommending those because of the high cost of buses. Those buses are, because they're very specialized, they're currently more expensive than a battery electric bus. And also, there's a high cost to put in that infrastructure to string the wires over all the streets where the buses would run. And then there's a need, obviously, those buses can only run on the streets where those wires have been installed. So it's the kind of thing that works for busy trunk routes in some cities where that infrastructure already exists, but can't work where you're aiming for an eventual complete conversion of the complete system. Hydrogen fuel cells, another zero emission technology. It's a way of storing and transporting electricity. We're not recommending those at this time because of the current high cost and untested nature of buses. There are very few of them, and the high cost of production or transportation of hydrogen. But that's certainly something that all of us in the transit industry will be watching in the years to come. Next slide, please. So what we are recommending is that the energy source be electricity because it is zero emission at the local point, and it meets the policy direction set by council, and it meets the funding eligibility from the federal agencies. Electricity can power the buses with no local emissions. Then the next step is that we recommend that batteries are the recommended storage technology to carry the electricity around from the garage as the bus moves through the city. Battery-powered buses can operate anywhere on the transit system, and battery-powered buses can be recharged at our garages, and if needed, can be charged along routes. But we're recommending long-range buses that can go from the garage, drive their scheduled work block, and then come back to the garage to be maintained, cleaned, and recharged all at the same time. The next slide, please. So a simple view, the electricity comes to the transit garage from Hydro Ottawa. It comes through the transit garage. It has to then be transformed into the right voltage to be supplied to the buses. That's done in the charging units, which you see is number 3. The pantograph is a device which is bolted to the ceiling of the garage, which reaches down and touches contacts on the bus. It's a way of basically plugging in the bus, but doing it from above where it can be done easily. The pantograph then touches the bus and makes contact, and over about 4 hours recharges the batteries on the bus. The next slide shows that same sequence in a little more detail, showing the elements of that as the transmission comes in to the hydro station, gets brought down to the distribution voltage. Then there's an on-site substation to bring it to the voltage that's used at the garage. And you can see the switchboard, the power pack, the pantograph, and the bus. And each of those elements needs to be sufficient, and in many cases needs to be built. In some cases, this this recommended program does require more, not only more equipment on site, but also more capacity on the distribution part of the hydro network. The next slide, please. What we need here, this is what we have now. We have 344, or 37% of our fleet is made up of the 40-foot buses. 38% of the fleet, or currently 356, is made up of the 60-foot articulated buses. 16% of our fleet, or 151 buses, are double-decker buses. And 9% of our fleet, or 81 buses, are the paratranspo mini buses. So you can see how that adds up to 932 buses right now. That adds up to 100% of the fleet. And you can see how we assign those different bus types, where there's up to 45, 70, or 90 people per trip when we're outside the pandemic. The paratranspo buses, which have very long range because they need to, or have a very long requirement for a range because they need to move across the entire city, completing everyone's trip. Availability of those buses right now is variable. The 40-foot buses are very available. These are the ones that we're buying to arrive this year. This is what we're recommending that you consider for purchasing next year for delivery the following year. Those are very available. 60-foot articulated buses are available, but currently don't have quite a long enough range for to meet our needs, but technology is improving quickly. Double-decker buses are just starting to become available and be tested in the North American market. And so we're quite optimistic that technology will improve by the time we need to replace our oldest double-decker buses. And paratranspo mini buses, we're watching those very, very closely because that'll do with how the automotive industry deals with small trucks, delivery trucks, things like that, things that are convertible into a minibus. And that market is opening up quickly, but currently in the market, we're just seeing the beginning of it. They're not in widespread use yet in paratransit service in North America. The next slide, please. So we maintain a fleet plan. It looks forward always many, many years so that we know when we're going to have capital expenditures on purchasing additional buses, when we're going to have capital savings because we don't need as many buses because we've opened an extension to an O-train line, how we plan our mid-life rebuilds for buses. And that fleet plan is long and extensive and feeds into the long-range financial plan. And it's set to make sure that we use our buses productively through their full life, 15 years for a conventional bus, 7 years for a paratranspo mini bus. As I mentioned, the bus fleet size goes down as planned O-train expansions open, but the bus fleet plan also grows as ridership is expected to grow as the city grows over the long term. The next buses that we need to acquire are going to be 74 40-foot buses that we would buy in 2022. They'd be included in the 2022 capital budget, expecting them to come in 2023 because delivery time when you place an order for a bus is something just over a year, sort of the 50 to 70 weeks from placing an order to getting delivery. And over the years from 2022 until 2027, the next 5 years, we need more than 450 new buses. The next slide shows that in a graph in one way. You can see in 2022, we moved some capital expenses in future years as part of dealing with COVID, but we do have 74 40-foot buses that we need in 2023. Then in 2024, you can see that bar chart as a stacked version showing you some 40-foot buses, some 60-foot articulated buses, and that's time for the replacement of the paratranspo bus fleet as well. Then in 2025, 40-foot buses, 66, I believe it is, 60-foot articulated buses. In 2026, you can see 40-foot buses, 60-foot buses, and a few trains that are scheduled to arrive then. And then 2027, you can see, in addition to a few 40-foot buses and 60-foot buses, also quite a few as we start to replace some 15-year-old double-decker buses. So those show you the years. We'll be watching that technology to develop so that we can recommend to you buses that that meet our operational needs. The other thing this graph shows is that you can see there's a bit of, just because of the echo of purchases that were made 15 years earlier and also influenced by the construction of light rail lines, there's quite a lull there from 2028 to 2030. And that means that over the next 5 years, there is an opportunity to replace almost half of the fleet in the first third of what is normally a 15-year life cycle. And that that is an opportunity to get a lot of fleet conversion done if we're moving to a new new energy source and a new technology. Next slide, please. So as I mentioned, buses are normally replaced after 15 years or 7 years for the minibuses that we use in paratranspo. Therefore, any technology change or any feature change takes 15 years to be on all buses. And we've done this before with air conditioning, with a seat design change. We're in that process right now with cameras on buses. Any feature change takes 15 years to propagate through the entire fleet as all the buses are replaced. We have 4 40-foot buses that are in production now, purchased last year for delivery this year and entry into service later this year. We're recommending, as I said, 74 40-foot buses for next year. And if those are battery electric buses, we will have 78 of them by 2023, giving us one of the largest fleets, not only in Canada, but in North America. The proposed loan from the Canada Infrastructure Bank, the proposed funding from Infrastructure Canada that we'll be showing you more later, is sized to allow the purchase of 450 battery electric buses over the years from 2022 to 2027, including those initial 78 buses. And we'll bring you, as John said, year-to-year recommendations on exactly what bus type to buy, exactly what, if there's any other transition costs, like if we have to do work at other garages. Technology's evolving in all sorts of ways, and we'll develop plans and recommendations for you on exactly what to do with the rest of the money over the remainder of that period. Conversion beyond 2027 is something that we would look at towards the end of this first five-year term, refreshing it, looking at what the technology status is at that time, looking at what the funding availability is at that time, seeing what the federal government policies are and what funding is available from the CIB or Infrastructure Canada or through any other program at that time. The next slide, please. Here's another graph. This is not the bus fleet acquisition plan, but this is what would result if the plan were adopted, the plan we're putting in front of you today, if this were adopted and all future bus purchases were zero emission, battery electric in the first 5 years, technology to be determined beyond that point. But if they're all zero emission, you can see that in 2022, we start with a tiny little orange fraction at the top of that blue bar. By 2023, we see more, the first 78. By 2024, a bigger chunk. And you can see that by 2027, it's almost sort of 5/8 to 2/3 of the fleet has been converted. We stay at about that level through to about 2033, and then we would mop up the last couple of hundred buses to be completely zero emission by 2036. Doing anything faster than that would require additional funding that currently isn't on the table and isn't available to us. The next slide, please. Now, as we set our requirements for the buses, one of the most fundamental things is they have to be buses that will work on our system. So they have to have a long enough range to cover a complete day's work. The long-range battery electric buses are charged at the garage, operate all the trips that make up the scheduled work block, come back to the garage for cleaning, maintenance, and recharging, just as they do now for refueling. Short-range battery electric buses are what's being tested in some other cities, Montreal and Vancouver, for instance. Those are charged repeatedly through the day. They've got a smaller battery. You put a charge into them very quickly at a high voltage, And you need charging infrastructure, not only at the garage, but also at points across the system. In our case, that might be at transitway stations or at major focal points downtown. All of the battery electric buses that are currently available, including the long range buses, do have a shorter range than diesel buses. Just that right now you can get more energy, more transportation energy in a tank of diesel fuel than you can in a bank of batteries that that can be carried on a bus. But we can manage that with long range buses. There's a shorter range than diesel buses. Those buses will have to come back to the garage more frequently, or else you schedule time at terminals if you were to adopt the short range buses. Both of those add some operating costs. In the early years, with the range that's available right now, we can manage that by assigning the current long range battery electric buses to the appropriate work blocks. The work blocks we have in our schedules right now, which are not long enough to, long enough between when the bus goes out and comes back that the battery electric bus can't handle it. So those appropriate length work blocks is the ones we would assign those first 78 buses to. And as technology improves, future generations of buses would have longer ranges. And if there's additional operating costs, because at one point we have to bring those buses back more frequently, we'll brief you on those in the budget updates of that year with our recommendations. But we're okay in these early years. The next slide, please. Other things that we need to watch for: we need to make sure that those buses have the capacity to move all the people they need to move. And the current buses do. Buses need to be able to climb the hills with the expected number of customers on board. They just have to be able to physically do the job, and the current ones do. We have to manage, or the manufacturers have to manage, the weight of the bus, balancing out the capacity of the bus, the weight of the bus frame, and the batteries, because batteries can be heavier than a full diesel fuel tank. Buses need to operate on all days, especially important in Ottawa with our wide range from the coldest days in the winter to the warmest days in the summer. We have to have no restrictions. The buses need to be able to do their job if it's minus 25 or if it's plus 30. And the buses need to be able to keep the customers on board warm in the winter and cool in the summer. So the current battery electric buses, as a result, the current battery electric buses in Canada are being equipped with a small diesel heater. It's not an engine, it's just a heater that is used on the coldest days. And that's to keep the customers warm on the bus and to keep the air system warm and dry on the bus. On the warm days, the air conditioners are run from the batteries, but it's just not feasible yet to run a battery electric bus and meet the full range and keep the bus warm on the cold days. We may get there in future, but it's just not there yet. The next slide, please.
So I just moved my cat to the floor.
There we go. So as I mentioned earlier, the market availability, the long range 40-foot buses are available from a number of manufacturers. The 60-foot articulated buses and the double-decker buses are available, not so widely, and don't have the range that the 40-foot buses do at this point. The minibuses suitable for paratranspo service are not yet widely available, though they've been announced. We're watching development as they continue on all of these bus types. So as John mentioned earlier, and as I mentioned earlier, subject to your approval of this plan, we would review the availability status and make recommendations to council in each year, as part of the capital budget, on what to purchase at that time to continue with this fleet conversion. Next slide, please. As John mentioned, the buses are just one part of the system. Another very important part is the charging infrastructure. OC Transpo garages need to be refitted to support battery electric buses. We need more electrical supply to the site. We need the electrical distribution within the garage property. We need to install the charging units and the pantographs to connect to the buses. We need to strengthen the roof structure of the garages to support the pantographs, and you can see on the right a picture from Edmonton of what those pantographs look like, reaching down to connect to the contacts on the top of the bus. Long term, once that conversion is complete, there will be the future ability and the need to remove the fuel tanks that are at our garages now, and there will be the ability to change the ventilation systems to keep keep the garages a safe workplace once diesel exhaust is no longer a concern. The next slide, please. Energy supply requirements. We talked about that quite a bit earlier. The current electrical supply to our four garages does not have enough capacity to support a large fleet of battery electric buses. Upgrades are required. Celeron Garage is the one that needs its best. It needs the least upgrade, and it's in the right location in the network, and it's our biggest garage. Buses take about 4 hours to charge, and so when the buses are in the garage, if they're there for 8 or 12 hours, three buses can be charged off the same charging block by using different pantographs, and we can charge the buses up overnight. Some buses come back to the garage during the midday, sort of between the morning rush hour, maybe coming back around 9 or 9:30 in the morning, going out again at 2:30 or 3 in the afternoon, and that gives us another opportunity where we can charge up some buses to get them through the afternoon and the evening. But we do need to avoid the times of peak consumption, because that's really, you know, those are late afternoons in the summer. Those are the peak times. We need to avoid those times because that's the time that really drives up our electrical costs for the full year. We also need to have a backup power supply because the transit system still needs to run, even if there's an electrical system outage. So that's part of the plan as well. Next slide, please. Market availability on the charging infrastructure. There's charging infrastructure available from several manufacturers, including what's listed there. Our recommendation to you is that we hire Ottawa Hydro to install those, and operate the charging infrastructure to our specifications. And Hydro Ottawa would also bring the upgraded electrical supply to the garages. Next slide, please. John mentioned earlier the transition requirements, a big part of the discussion with the federal agencies. Some of the one-time costs that we have to retrain our technicians and operators so that they are, because they're working on a different type of bus. There will be some program management because this is a big program. We're going to need specialist contractors to us to advise us on all the aspects that we're talking about at the plan level right now. We will have to hire specialized staff who are qualified to work on some of these parts of the buses, people who don't work for the city now. And we will need some, we need to integrate or add some computer systems to manage the battery electric buses to make sure that we're operating those charges as well as we can to integrate their operating cycle into our current management systems. And there'll be more things than this. These are some of the examples of the transition costs that we will incur. The next slide, please. So moving on to one of the most important parts of the whole plan is that we had to bring you a plan that is affordable and feasible. And as you know, all of our spending, the operating spending, the capital spending, is all projected out for many, many years in the long-range financial plan for transit, which we also sometimes call the affordability plan. We need to make sure that you and council know that all of the current and future capital and operating costs are covered by the current and future revenue sources that the city has, such as customers' fares, property taxes, gas taxes, development charges, contributions from the federal and provincial governments. As you know, the long-range financial plan is fully planned out to 2048 with a lot of capital funding going to the Stage 2 O-Train expansion and to the other major capital projects that support and go along with Stage 2, to the point that the Stage 3 expansion needs to be fully funded by the federal and provincial governments, a point that we've all been talking about for many years. And similarly, the conversion of the bus fleet to zero emission needs to be done within the limits of the affordability plan, which is being updated right now. What the Canada Infrastructure Bank and Infrastructure Canada programs unlock is that is now possible. The cost premiums of the electric buses, because they're more expensive than a a diesel bus, the charging infrastructure, the transition costs would not have been affordable without those funding programs from the federal government. And now with those federal funding programs, they are affordable, and that's why we can bring you this plan. The next slide, please. So those two the two basic funding announcements that the federal government's made, loans through the Canada Infrastructure Bank, which will fund the higher capital cost and pay back the loan from the lower operating cost over the life of the bus. So it's a loan, it's not a grant, but it meets the challenge that municipalities across the country have. It's the one-time upfront payment to buy a more expensive bus, and then we pay it back by the lower operating cost over the life of the bus. And then the grants that would come through Infrastructure Canada to cover infrastructure upgrades and transition costs. So we're working with these agencies to enter into the appropriate agreements following your consideration of this report. The next slide, please. So here's what we're recommending. We already have in process the four buses that are coming this year that were purchased last year. We will recommend in the 2022 capital budget the purchase of 74 more 40-foot battery electric buses. We'll recommend to also the purchase, the costs to install charging infrastructure during the year 2022 so they can be it can be ready for use by the time those buses can come. We will bring you recommendations for bus purchases and charging infrastructure requirement and all the requirements for the capital budgets in the years beyond then, 2023 to 2027. And we're recommending to you that we do a refresh of this plan to look at the technology and funding options for the years beyond 2027. This cat needs to go. The next slide, please. Here's how the different agencies work together. The city on the top right, Canada Infrastructure Bank and Infrastructure Canada on the left. Canada Infrastructure Bank loans money to the city through a lending agreement to cover the cost premiums of the whole package, primarily the buses, but also some of the charging costs. Infrastructure Canada also on the left, providing a grant of 35% to 50%, still to be announced how that program's going to work. Provide that as a grant to the city. Based on that, the city pays for the buses, pays for the charging infrastructure, pays for the transition costs, operates and maintains the buses. And we contract with Hydro Ottawa to provide, operate, and maintain the charging infrastructure for us. The next slide, please. Here's how the cost sharing of this whole program for 450 buses over 5 years would work. The costs, the battery electric buses would cost $760 million over that time. The charging infrastructure, about $204 million. The transition costs, about $22 million, all adding up to just under $1 billion. The sources of funds, we'd get between $345 and $500 million from Infrastructure Canada. I wonder if I can just ask everyone if I can pause for a moment. There's somebody at my front door. I'm sorry.
Absolutely, yeah, Pat.
Mr. Chair, can I just confirm that there's a delegation after this presentation?
Yes, there is a delegation after this presentation.
Thank you.
Okay. And Vice Chair Kluche, can you just chair for a few minutes here? I also need to step away to make a quick call.
Absolutely, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Mr. Vice Chair. I'm back.
Welcome back.
Sorry for the delay. So that's the costs over 5 years for 450 buses of just under $1 billion. The sources of funds, Infrastructure Canada, between $345 and $493 million, which represents a third to a half of that total amount, depending on the nature of what their eligibility criteria are. The city share, we would fund, first of all, payback of the loan from the CIB, from the cost savings. That would be about $400 million. The city's capital funding from our normal capital expenditures would be between $93 million and $241 million, depending on how much Infrastructure Canada will provide. And that all adds up to 986 million as well, just short of $1 billion over 5 years. Now, it's important to note that these costs are preliminary. This is for the planning purposes. This is to make sure that we can show you a plan that works. There's much more work to be done. And we're more certain of some numbers than we are of others because they're more market tested and because they're more generally applicable. So there will be much more work to be done based on your approval of this plan and these policy directions. The next slide, please. There's a lot of uncertainty, there's a lot of variability. So some of the risks are outlined here, risks that could come true and how we would be or have built mitigations into this plan or would be building mitigations in the future. So I'll just scan these nine or so. Under financial, we've got the risk that the operating savings are not actually achieved. We do expect that these buses are cheaper to maintain because there's fewer moving parts. We do expect that the energy costs are lower, but there is a risk that that will not be achieved. That we will cover in the CIB agreement. The CIB's direction from the federal government is that they are to take some risk on whether those operating savings actually occur. There's a risk of fluctuations in energy price, the relative price between electricity and diesel per, you know, for us, it's per customer kilometer. Those could change. We'll be looking at that along with Hydro Ottawa on how to mitigate those, whether we prepay or other ways of mitigating fluctuations in energy price. There's a risk of increase in some of our costs that they might come in more expensive than we're outlining here, and we will address those as much as possible in the funding agreements with the CIB and Infrastructure Canada so that there's a sharing of that risk. There is always the risk of change in federal policy direction, and if that occurs, we would report back to you with recommendations to get your direction. But at the moment, the federal agencies that we're talking to, the CIB and Infrastructure Canada, are indicating that the next 5 years from 2022 to 2027 are solid from their point of view. The federal funding stacking rules, that's the rules that the federal government has to limit their contribution through all sorts of grants. They set rules so that what's coming from gas taxes, what's coming from grants, what's coming from CIB loans can only add up to a certain fraction of the total. That will form part of our conditions. If those stacking rules make this unaffordable, we would advise you that this was no longer a feasible way to go. So that's part of the discussions. That's a very important part of the discussions with the CIB and Infrastructure Canada. On the operational side, there's a risk that the bus reliability will be unsatisfactory. We will work, and the CIB will work alongside us to address that in the procurement of the buses and make sure that we get an appropriate warranty from the manufacturers. There's the risk that the bus range would be too short, that the buses won't provide the range that we need them to. We can manage that for the early years, certainly by keeping the initial buses to the work blocks of an appropriate length. And if we have to change the specifications of future purchases to increase the range, we'd do that as technology improves. There's the risk that the bus life, there's always a risk that the bus life does not achieve its full 15-year cycle. We'll make sure we cover that in the long-term warranty with the manufacturer and also in the agreement with the CIB. There's a risk of power outages, and it's necessary, of course, that the transit system continue to run even if the electricity is out, and so a backup generator on site to charge the buses is a part of this plan. The next slide, please. So at the end of all this, there are benefits, and you know these benefits well. They're laid out in the city's climate change master plan. There'd be no pollution from the buses. There'd be no greenhouse gas emissions coming from the buses, except for that small diesel heater used on cold days. This is, the transit system is a big part of the city's work to address climate change. There will be reduced operating costs, which we would be using to fund the capital cost through that loan facility with the CIB. The funding agreement is structured in such a way that the city is kept whole overall for operating and capital costs, continuing to adhere to the affordability model, and the buses will be quieter as they operate through the city. For transit customers, I think the next slide. For transit customers, these are new buses that will replace life-expired diesel buses. They'll just be new 40-foot buses. We will use them where they can be used to their best advantage, where they can provide the most environmental benefit based on the operating requirements, making sure that we get the most we can out of these buses. There'll be no pollution. There'll be no greenhouse gas emissions near the buses. The buses will be quieter. But for people's travel around the city, those buses will look generally the same, feel generally the same, quieter inside, same capacity to move people, same ability to maintain the current schedules and any future service levels that are set. The next slide, please. So at the end of this and at the beginning of your report, you'll see that there are 7 recommendations. And I'll go through those one at a time. There's much more detail in the report. The first recommendation is that you and council give us direction that the city will purchase zero-emission buses for all future transit bus fleet needs on the basis that buses are available to meet operational needs and that the purchase is affordable under the Transit Long Range Financial Plan. 2, that you approve that the selection of battery electric as the suitable zero-emission bus technology for the next 5 years, from 2022 to 2027. 3, that we recommend to council each year in the capital budget the number and the size of buses to be purchased, whether current buses that size are available as suitable to zero-emission buses, and whether appropriate financing is available. 4, we're recommending authority for the general manager to negotiate an agreement with Hydro Ottawa and its subsidiaries for energy supply, for provision of backup power, and for supply and operation of charging infrastructure. The 5th recommendation is to give authority to the general manager and the treasurer to negotiate the financing agreement with the Canada Infrastructure Bank so that it will have no net effect on the Transit Long Range Financial Plan, subject to stacking rules and acceptable risk transfer. The 6th recommendation is to give authority for the general manager and the treasurer to negotiate the funding agreement with Infrastructure Canada, again, to have no net effect on the Transit Long Range Financial Plan, subject to stacking rules and acceptable risk transfer. And 7th recommendation is authority for the general manager and the chief procurement officer to conduct a multi-year procurement process so that we can get every saving possible out of a large-scale procurement with manufacturers of charging equipment and battery electric buses. The next slide, please. So here is the timeline. We're here at the Transit Commission in June with that diamond at the top. We'd be negotiating the agreements with CIB, Infrastructure Canada, and Hydro Ottawa over the months to come. We need to get CIB approval. Here it's shown by January. Infrastructure Canada approval, again, it's shown by January. Hydro Ottawa approval shown before the end of the year. We'll be confirming through the rest of this year with the procurement plan that we're recommending to you to confirm the pricing of all of the infrastructure so that we have that information and can bring it to you in the capital budget. We'll nail down all of our transition costs, complete, recalculate again and again the financial model so that we can bring the right recommendations to council for approval in the budget. And then we can proceed to financial close of the financial agreements, the landing agreement, the funding agreement with CIB and Infrastructure Canada. And then we can place the orders for the buses early in 2022 so that they can come as early as possible and replace the life expired 40-foot buses and go into service. The next slide, please. Oh, and we've come to the end. Thank you very much, and we'll be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Scrimger. And okay, I see we have two questions. Councillor Fleury?
Chair, I think you have delegations, Mr. Chair.
Oh, sorry. Thank you. Yes, we have a delegation. Sorry, my apologies. And I believe it's Raymond Laurie from the Electric Vehicle Council of Ontario. Is he there, Eric?
Yeah, I'm there.
Okay. Go ahead, Raymond, whenever you're ready.
So, Eric, can you please put the presentation up?
Yes, one moment, please.
And you could go to the second slide. So while Eric is doing that, I'll just cover the second slide. Second slide talks about EVCO. So thank you, Chair, first of all, for letting me speak today. The first slide that we're seeing right now is that it talks about, that's the wrong presentation. Let me talk to the subject matter instead. So that's the wrong presentation. BC Transit Fleet, sorry about that. EVCO is the Electric Vehicle Council of Ottawa, and we're a 100% volunteer nonprofit organization. We have no ties to industry. So what we are looking at is accelerating the electrification of the transportation system. And the second slide, which I wish you could see, is actually a congratulations to staff. We are very pleased with the report, very pleased with the presentation that Mr. Scrimger just made. It mirrors essentially the recommendations that we've been advocating for over the last few years. And it will allow OC Transpo to reduce GHG by 125,000 tons per year by the time that we're done with the transition to electric buses. And this will allow the city to save money and also do what's best for the planet, which is to reduce greenhouse gases and also reduce other types of pollutants that that cause health issues. So just a couple of things about the report that we want to review. So in particular, there's a mention about reviewing technologies, available technologies in 2026. Our assessment is that hydrogen will still be more expensive, and we believe actually that the differential between hydrogen and electric will grow by that time. So we believe this to be a foregone conclusion that hydrogen will not be a good solution. So what we're recommending is to refocus that review on the midlife refit. So Mr. Scrimger talked about the midlife refit briefly, and that typically involves replacing the engine and the transmission. There's already a company in Milton that does conversions in situations like that would allow you to convert the older buses to electric buses. We believe that based on the declining price of batteries, that it may become economic by that time to do the conversion to electric. And that would allow the city to accelerate the electrification and basically allow the city to convert almost all the buses to electric by 2029. There'll be a few exceptions, more than likely, but most of the buses would be converted by then. So the other thing we were looking at, actually, Mr. Scrimger covered it quite well, as a paratransport fleet. So it'd be nice if we could take advantage of the opportunity of renewing the fleet in 2024 to electrify it. And we are aware, as Mr. Scrimger said, that there aren't many solutions in market right now. There are a few, but they're very new to the market. But there's an opportunity for that to be studied, as was mentioned in the presentation. Other things that we were looking at, and we didn't see any mention in the report, although they weren't specifically in the scope of the report. So the stage two expansion of the Trillium line, the original plan was to do diesel. We were hoping to see that electrified. If we don't electrify it now, it'll probably be a decade or more before we have an opportunity to do that. And also, OC Transpo's got a fleet of other vehicles that are used for all sorts of purposes. And there are solutions available for just about every use, either rate in market today or coming to market soon, that would be good options for OC Transpo. And the final thought is that these garages are very large surfaces, and those would be ideal to deploy solar, which could be used in those, particularly in the those very hot midsummer days that Mr. Scrimger spoke about, to supplement the supply of electricity to either shave the peak in the afternoon or to charge the buses during the afternoon. On that, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Lowry, for your presentation. The councillors with their hands up, is this questions for the delegation? No. Councillor Meehan, are you asking questions of the delegation?
I can.
I had a question to the delegation, Chair, if nobody else does.
Okay. Go ahead then, Councillor McKenna.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Ray, for the presentation, could you just expand a little on the notion of the fleet conversion and how you feel that that could be done by 2029? What would that look like? I know that you said that there was in Milton, there was the capacity for midlife retrofits. Talk about what that timing would look like, and what exactly that would look like, and do you feel that that would be cost effective rather than waiting to just convert out our buses?
Okay, so a couple of questions in that. So first of all, there is a company in Milton that is doing the conversions. Now, whether it's cost effective or not, I'm not sure at this point. What we do know, though, is batteries are dropping in price about 20% a year. So the cost structure will change significantly between now and 2026. So that's why we're recommending that OC Transpo have a look at this and see if the business model makes sense, right? So the cost of substituting the battery and electric motor versus the diesel transmission and engine, and the savings in fuel and maintenance afterwards, do those trade off, and is it a good business decision? We don't know at this point, and it's too early to tell.
Okay, so go ahead. Ideally, then we would go ahead, obviously, with the 40-foot.
Yes.
2022-23.
Yes.
And as we have that great graph that that Pat had up that showed how we're going to move through the 450. So at some point there, you would suggest that we look at midlife conversion, if in fact that it becomes cost effective.
Correct. Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Councillor. If I could, Mr. Manconi, can you speak to the issue of the Trillium line, please, that the delegation raised?
Thanks, Chair. I do want to clarify some things. And, thank you, Mr. Lurie, for the comments. I do wish he would pick up the phone and call us once in a while, because some of his facts are just wrong. The Trillium line, we bought, you approved trains that are convertible to electric. And that's because we kept that in line. I know there was many councillors that had very good discussions with me, Councillor Deans, Councillor Riley, to keep that option open. And we said we're keeping every option open, electrification of that line, hydrogen of that line, and so forth. So your trains are convertible. There's a battery pack conversion program to it. On the conversion of buses, we've looked at that in the past, and as Mr. Lurie pointed out, there is risk and there is cost in that. And again, my advice to you is be leading edge. Don't be bleeding edge. You've got a robust plan in front of you here to do massive conversions. Doing midlife conversions and swapping out components sounds so easy. But unless Mr. Lurie is aware of a fleet operation that's done it at the scope and scale of ours, I would not go into that space. But again, we will check in every year with you. And if that approach leads to faster adoption of your council approved goals and is cheaper and is more reliable. The last thing you want to do is add more risk to a profile. We've given you all the risks in front of you and getting into midlife conversion of battery packs and so forth. Remember, we had that difficult discussion and some of you were around when we wanted to convert hybrids back to diesel buses. So it sounds easy on paper. It's very complicated to do. And buying new and buying state-of-the-art is our recommendation to you. But we will certainly look at that as it evolves. Just want to assure members of committee, you have the ability to convert the Trillium line, and we are aware of all the conversion programs that are out there. And we will certainly entertain those if those become attractive and feasible or take direction from council in that regard.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Manconi. Okay, so is that it for the delegation? Okay. All right, thank you. Thank you very much for coming out today. We appreciate your participation. Okay, going to questions of staff now. So we go to commission members first, and I believe Councillor Kavanaugh was the first commission member.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm sure everybody's going to have tons of questions on this. It's a pretty exciting project, and I want to say thank you for making this initiative. I know this is something that we have been asking for as council, and certainly those of us on the climate change committee that works together, a sponsorship group, pardon me. But there are people out there that have concerns about cost. These are very expensive buses, and they had some questions. So I wanted to bring them forward on behalf of residents in terms of the ongoing costs, and that is the replacement of batteries versus gas. There was concern that one would be, that it would actually be higher in the long term. So I'm wondering if you have any information on that, and how much does it cost to dispose of batteries? Another question. So I want to make sure we have all the information for the public.
Mr. Chair, I have some information on these points. So on the current advice from the manufacturers is that battery packs would need to be replaced once over the life of a bus. Total cost currently estimated at about $120,000, most of which is for the battery and a little bit for labor. That's factored into the life cycle recommendations that we have for you. Currently, the current estimate we have from one of the manufacturers is that the total cost for disposing of a battery at end of life is a little over $5,000. So it's, you know, it's an amount, but it's not an amount at the scale. You know, it's not an amount that would change the recommendation here. Another point that we have, which may speak to some of the questions that the councillor has relayed, is the cost of energy. Our calculations right now at current diesel prices and current electricity prices is that the cost of cost to charge the battery electric bus to do the same transportation work as a diesel bus, the energy cost will be about 40% of the current cost. Now that could change in future, but that's based on today's costs. So I hope those points will answer the councillor's questions. If there's more detail than that the councillor is looking for, we can do more research.
That's very helpful. I guess they were looking for numbers of one versus the other, of batteries versus gas. So since that was raised, I wanted to make sure that people have that information so they can see that over the long term, it's meant to be a cost savings. So I appreciate that. A big part of the cost is in terms of the maintenance and retooling our shops and retraining staff and the ongoing cost of keeping these buses on the road. Can you give me an idea of what it would cost to refit one of our maintenance facilities versus do we need a whole new building? Is it necessary to just start from scratch? Because it's so different.
Chair, the transition costs are on that slide, and a chunk of that, and I'll ask Pat to comment if he's got it broken down on those pieces. are there. On the facility piece, we chose Saint-Laurent strategically because we can fit it up and we know Saint-Laurent is staying in the long term. As we move through the fleet, there'll be other opportunities to review other garages. Councillor Cavanaugh, you and I have been having some discussions about the West End garage, which we all know one day that will have to be moved. It's right next to an LRT station and so forth. That gives us an opportunity. And that's why this plan works, in that it's a dynamic plan. Where we're storing buses externally, such as Indy, we will probably move to canopies or some sort of shelter for those buses for winter operations. So those are some of the transition piece. And then, as you've touched on, retraining and retooling. So you're going from wrenches to a lot of screwdrivers and electrical maintenance things. Those are all covered in the transition piece. And again, the secret sauce to this whole arrangement is when Infrastructure Canada said they would fund transition costs, those were an important piece to the puzzle. And that includes facility fit-ups.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate that you raised that point about the West End. So another thing that people are going to raise, and I'm just going to say it because this is what people say, is, well, if we're going to zero admissions with buses, why did we put in a train system? Why did we spend all that money on a train system? And I know the answers, but I want to hear it out.
Sure. I could talk for a day about this.
Don't take a day.
No, I won't take a day. But the council decision and the program to build the O-Train and expand the O-Train accomplishes so many other things. Emission reduction is one of them. Support for the city growing beyond its current level is another one. Removing the removing the constraints that we had, where the roads couldn't handle the buses for all of the growth that the city would like to have in the future. Changing the dynamic of how downtown streets work, giving those curb lanes and those sidewalks back to purposes other than transportation, providing a reliable transit service, avoiding all the bottlenecks on the road network that buses have been operating through, even with the transitway. There's so many things that the O-Train huge program accomplishes with its multi-billion dollars, and emission reduction is one of them. And moving to an electric bus fleet is a way of completing more of the job on the emission side and on the energy price side.
Thank you. I don't know how much time I have left, so I may have to go back on the list if I don't finish my questions. But in terms of accessibility, I believe you were talking about that. But just to what extent is it improvement over what we have now with current buses? And one thing that I was wondering about, in terms of the fact that they're silent, is there an issue with people who are blind that they won't hear the bus coming? So that just occurred to me that might be a consideration. An issue
On accessibility, they would be functionally the same as the buses we have today. They might come from a different manufacturer, but we've had buses from the buses we've bought for the last 23 years have all been fully accessible with a low floor, and that would continue. The buses are generally the same configuration inside, low floor at from the front door to the back door, some steps up to a raised seating area in the back over the axle and transmission at the back. As far as the detectability of the buses by people who are blind, that is something that Transport Canada is looking at, and our information is that Transport Canada may be making some regulations that electric buses or electric vehicles of a certain size have to make a certain noise or a certain noise at certain times or speeds or in certain locations. And so that will be part of the responsibility of the manufacturers to deliver us a bus that meets all applicable safety standards. Because we don't know where that's going to end. We don't, I wouldn't want to give you a false, you know, a direct response that says this is how they're going to be or that's going to be, but we'll make sure, as we always do, that every bus meets the applicable safety standards.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just want to add to that, like we've done with every new vehicle, we will consult directly with the Accessibility Advisory Committee. They were outstanding on the train design. They led to a bunch of changes. They did the pair of vehicles, and we will connect with them and make sure that they're engaged.
Great, thanks very much. Just one last question. In terms of costs, this is hopefully in the long term cost saving, but I just want to make sure that we're not passing on the cost to the transit riders, that we're not going to have to deal with any hikes, because that's one of the concerns that I have is for transit riders, that we want them to use the system, and we may turn them off if we raise the prices. So I just want to have that you'll state that this is not the case, that we're not going to increase costs for transit riders. These costs.
Sorry, Councillor Kavanaugh, Council has already approved the long-range plan for transit. We know that there are annual increases built into the growth of the system and so on. So there, staff can't tell you today that there'll be no increases over the next life of this agreement, 2027. So I'm sorry, we won't be able to address that here today.
Okay, well, I'm just raising the issue anyway so that we can keep in mind that that's the number one thing is the transit rider, and part of the experience is cost. Okay. All right, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Councillor. Next up is Councillor Tierney, please, followed by Councillor Brockington.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. First of all, kudos to the presentation. It was very chock full of information, and please forgive me. First of all, I think we all want to know the name of your cat, but I did have to skip out for 30 seconds, so I'm hoping I'm not asking a question that was in the presentation. First of all, you were mentioning that during certain seasons here in Canada, it's cold, it's hot, there's some kind of pump system. What kind of fuel does that use, Pat?
The transit systems that have got these in place, it's a small diesel-powered heater.
Diesel. Okay. So obviously we'd be consuming far less than what we would be. So I guess there would be a whole discussion around, would we need diesel contracts anymore? Is that sort of, you know, we have to plan for the future. We're not going to need these massive diesel fuel locked in rates anymore. It would be substantially less, I would assume.
As fleet conversion continues, then yes, obviously.
Okay, great. The other question I had was the weight of the vehicles. And the only reason I'm bringing this up is I was watching television. There's a great new F-150 pickup truck coming out. It's like 6,500 pounds, fully electric. It's faster, better than even a regular old pickup truck. Unfortunately, the weight is substantially more than the 2,500 standard pickup truck. I'm just thinking, I know we give resurfacing and priority to routes for buses. Do we have any concerns, or is it pretty much the same weight and it's not really much of a concern?
It is a concern, and it's something that the manufacturers have to deal with. They have to be able to design a bus that that meets all of its requirements, that it is an appropriate weight to run on the roads, that it does have enough, so that would imply making it as light as possible, that it has enough range, so that would imply putting in a lot of weight in batteries, but you'd want to balance that off with weight savings in the structure. It needs to have the capacity to move as many people as it needs to move. It needs to have the strength to stay together and accommodate the weight of those passengers. And this is a balance that the manufacturers, and you know, along with all the other technology challenges, that is one of the major challenges that the manufacturers have to deal with. We will set out in the specifications, as we have for the buses, the four buses that are coming first, we'll set out in the specifications what our operational requirements are. That will include any safety considerations, that will include any weight considerations. The manufacturers will propose a bus, and it needs to be a bus that meets all of the criteria, all of the requirements.
Okay, great. And again, I'm very happy about this, but I assume we've looked at other municipalities just to make sure that we're factoring in if we have to on life cycle of roads in certain areas. All those factors are in play. We just want to make sure that we're all covered off. I do think it's tremendous. I'm very excited about these buses. And the other question is, I think you're going to have to deal with a whole bunch of angry cats at council going, I would love to see these buses in my area. I'm very excited to see them come to town. How are you going to parcel them out through the city? You mentioned it's where it's the most effective, but is there going to be some kind of balance on that? Some level of urban, suburban, like kind of a mix, not just focused on one specific area?
So first of all, because the buses that we're getting first and because the buses that we're recommending for the first larger purchase, and because that's what's available to us right now, is 40-foot buses. They would go on trips that are normally run with 40-foot buses. That would mean they're primarily going to be on local routes, secondary routes. They're not going to be as much on the main transitway routes, which are run with articulated buses, the main connection routes, which are primarily run with double-decker buses. When those buses become available, that's where we'd be able to convert those trips at all as well. Second, the range of these buses is shorter than a diesel bus. The range of the currently available battery electric buses is shorter. So these would be on buses that probably go out in the morning and come back in the middle of the day, or that go out in the afternoon and stay out into the early evening. These would not be on the buses that are out all day long on some of the long crosstown routes, buses that go out at 6 in the morning and don't come back until 9 at night. These are buses that are probably out for 6 hours, not for 12 hours. That will mean that they will probably be on routes that are closer to the garage, so we don't have the operating cost of bringing them back. And because the garage is fairly centrally located, those buses will be all across the city, but they will probably end up more on the east side of Bank Street than on, than west of Merivale. But they'll be everywhere. They'll be on crosstown routes. They will show up in all parts of the city. Currently, we think that in order to get the best advantage out of them, what we will do is we'll put them on the longest work blocks that are under their maximum range. If we went over the maximum range, they wouldn't be feasible to do it. We'd have to tow them back. If we go too far under that range, then we're not getting the best advantage out of them at all. If we put them on just short blocks that are going out to do a couple of trips in the morning, like a school trip or two. So we'll be putting them on the longer blocks that are just under their feasible range, as we, they come with a range quoted, but we'll see what that range actually is, and we'll keep pushing it. Can we drive them longer? What kind of charge are they coming back with? How close can we go to, how we manage our phones through the day? How close to zero are we willing to go before we plug in the phone to recharge? That kind of concept we'll learn. At 78, the first 70, the four plus the next 74, if that's the number we purchase, that'll be, about one of every four 40-foot buses in the fleet.
Great. And super quick on that, Pat, like, I love your phone analogy. It's great. And if I missed it, please forgive me. If a bus dies en route, is there like a remote charging thing that goes out and quick charges it to get it back to the station? Or is it like a tow thing?
We can't plug them in to a wall plug or a supply that's coming in from a bus shelter or something. We need to get them back to the garage to be charged properly. So okay. if they die on the street, which we would be seeking to avoid, they'd have to be towed back in.
I drive my car right down to the needle, like right on the empty, so I get it all the time. Anyway, terrific presentation. Still want to know the name of the cat. This is really good stuff. And thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Councilor Tierney. Next up is Councilor Brockington.
Thank you, Chair. Just start off with a question for Mr. Manconi, if I can, to help me better understand, sir, your mindset. A few years ago, I think it's fair to say you weren't overly warm and fuzzy with the e-bus idea. We cautiously embraced a four-bus pilot, which I think was certainly the right thing to do, and was eager to get those results. Today, we have a massive recommendation to ensure that we pivot and all buses purchased going forward are e-bus. So is it not wise to get results? You enumerate a number of risks. You've articulated this a few times. Is it not wise to get the results of the pilot in Ottawa, Winter City, large geography, study that before we entertain these types of heavy duty recommendations? Help me understand your thinking.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the question. So if you recall, my response was consistent in that there was people out there saying, just go out and buy electric buses and they'll pay for themselves. They do not pay for themselves without the financial backing of what the CIB has done and what Infrastructure Canada has done. And the numbers in the 40-page report speaks to that. What everybody was talking about was buy electric bus, you save a bunch of diesel, and you can plow that back. Well, many of those people didn't operate 1,000 bus fleets. Many of those people didn't understand the transition costs of taking a diesel mechanic and retraining her or him to fix those vehicles. And many people didn't understand the complexity of charging infrastructure, which that market has exploded exponentially in Canada and the U.S. And watch what happens with the Biden administration, a $1 trillion bill on infrastructure spending. The market is going to just basically take off. The risks at the time, even 2 years ago, was long range. Long range 40-foot buses are proven. They're proven in cold weather. They're proven in our weather. The diesel heater that we just spoke about, that's a check in the box. And the pieces of the puzzle came together from the financial piece, from CIB, which the fine print on that deal is very important. It says, and Wendy can attest to this, we normally don't go get third-party loans because we can get better rates. It says if the savings don't come back, you don't have to pay us back the loan. And so that is that de-risking of that piece of it, and Infrastructure Canada funding the transition costs, which are very, very significant. And then the other piece, I have to thank Hydro Ottawa, because the model we've now put together, many agencies that are in the transportation business want to be transporters and they want to be in the energy business. I don't want to be in the energy business. You own a strategic partner with amazing, talented people that know this business inside out. And Bryce, you know, coined a phrase, and I love it. I've been using it. We're going with the Netflix model in this big bus arrangement. We drive the buses, we plug them in and maintain them. Hydro Ottawa maintains, you know, that the other portions of the infrastructure, which is very, very complicated. Things came together very quickly on the financial. And in terms of the technology, 40-foot long-range buses, there are no concerns that we're aware of out in the industry. And all the other announcements that you've heard out there about moving their fleets to a certain state didn't have this robust plan behind it. And I know that many other municipalities, since we've tabled our report, are calling us and asking for our advice as to how we did it. It's because we got great partnerships, we got talented people, you have a great hydro authority, which is the envy of many. And we're leveraging all those assets. And you had a strategic direction that you wanted us to aim for. What are the concerns going forward? It's what we've articulated in the report. And also, does the technology keep up? There's a double-decker bus right now in California that New Flyer will lend to us, hopefully at the end of this year, that's being tested. A Nova bus introduced a long-range articulated bus, but we have to see it get proven in terms of getting it built out and so forth. So, yes, things did shift, but we're focusing on the 40-foot buses, which are robust and reliable, and you now have the funding model. If you didn't have the funding model, there was no way you were going to fund this unless you were prepared to take hundreds of millions of dollars of projects off your transit affordability plan.
So just on that piece, Mr. Scrimger, $986 million is the estimated price tag for 5 years. What will the federal grant cover? And then is all the rest lent to us?
There's only two funding sources.
I'm going to ask Mr. Bucci from Deloitte. He knows those numbers inside out. I'm going to ask Mr. Bucci and Ms. Stephenson to step in on that. So, Raimo, can you give a summary, please?
Sure. And hopefully everybody can hear me, just to make sure my mic's on. Thank you. So of the billion, roughly, let's start with the grant, the money that will be that's not repayable. We're forecasting between 35 to 50% of that. That'll come in from Infrastructure Canada. And eligibility requirements and the rules around that to be confirmed. But we also know that that program will be synchronized with the Infrastructure Bank program, so there won't be a conflict. The $400 million will come from the CIB, from the bank, and the funds for that will be from the savings. So as Mr. Manconi mentioned, provided that you meet you can't meet the savings plan, then the portion of the loan that would do won't have to be made, you know, by the end of the term of the loan.
So just so I'm crystal clear, whatever the grant does not cover, we are borrowing through this federal program.
And then the third component would be the portion that the city's contributing from your affordability plan, which would be the difference of the $400 million from the CIB and the 35 to 50% from Infrastructure Canada. And it's on that one slide that Mr. Scrivenger had presented earlier.
And is that money we would have normally spent to buy the diesel buses?
That's correct.
It's not new money. It's money we were budgeting to spend anyway.
It's lower right now based on the 450 that's there.
Okay. What is the difference between the purchase of 450 e-buses, which you're pegging at $585 million, and 450 diesel buses, the regular buses?
I don't have that offhand. We can probably get, I don't know if Mr. Scrivenger has that available. We have the numbers. I just don't have it available in front of me right now.
Just to give a color of it without quoting the exact number, the battery electric bus, you know, list price is a little less than double the price of a diesel bus.
Okay. All right. I want to be cognizant of time. Recommendation one, part one, talks about we're all in. All future transit bus fleet needs, we're making a decision right now. Talk to me about why wouldn't we say, listen, for the next 5 years, this is the direction we're going. We're going to have a significant analysis after 5 years, and then we'll ask you to commit after the 5 years. Why make a statement now that all future bus purchases are going to be this? We haven't even tested one bus yet. I'm just raising caution and concern that I've heard and I have. I definitely want to go in this direction, but why not say for the next 5 years, this is our strategy. We'll assess it after five, and then you can make a decision going forward after then.
Councillor, just for clarification, it does not specify the technology. It says zero emission. So that is a mirroring of the council direction that you gave in your climate plan. You said get to zero emission by 2036 or whatever that date is. This is a confirmation of that. It doesn't say electric. It says zero emission buses for the future.
Okay. All right, I may have to come back to that one. Items 5 and 6 talk about the delegated authority to you, sir, the GM, and in the other one, I think the city treasurer. This is about negotiating the long-term financing agreement. Part 5 and Part 6 is the funding agreement with Infrastructure Canada. Why not come back to the Transit Commission and say, look, we've negotiated the terms of this agreement. We want to go through it with you. We still don't know what percentage of the grant is. We don't know the terms of that loan. Again, I would feel very comfortable having a review of here's what we've negotiated. We're ready to sign. Here's why this is good for the City of Ottawa and seek that endorsement at that time. It's $1 billion. Why not come back and provide that review before we sign the agreements?
Councillor, actually, that's a very good point, and we will do that. If I could just bring up slide 31, please, from the clerk. This is an important point.
Okay.
Our intention, and I will ask Ms. Stephenson to confirm, is that when we are presenting the, in this case, the transit budget in December of this year for next year, we would bring all that to you to say the budget includes your purchasing of going ahead with this deal, and we can certainly, we'd be happy to take that as direction that we would include as much or as little detail as you want in that update at that point. And I just want to confirm with Ms. Stephenson on that. In terms of the timeline, we just want to keep the ball rolling, but we'd be happy to bring as part of the tabling of the budget, either a supplementary report or part of the tabling report on all those details. And of course, if things go sideways and we don't land some of the critical things like the stacking rules, and for those that aren't aware what that means, is that's applying grants on top of grants. If those things go sideways on us and this deal comes apart, we can certainly notify you before then. But I'm happy to take direction that we will check in as part of our budget process. I'd just like Ms. Stephenson to comment on that.
Thanks, John. And yes, we'll absolutely do that.
I don't want to add an extra speed bump or hurdle in a process that may have some timely strings attached to it. But Mr. Manconi, it's $1 billion. And my level of comfort can be somewhat addressed by coming before you sign the deal, wherever this is on the grid here in front of us, you come back to the Transit Commission and you just give us that overview. Give us that level of comfort. So if you're committing to doing that, then I'm okay with 5 and 6 in the recommendation, but I want that noted that you're making that commitment. And that gives me that level of comfort that we just review the tentative agreement that you have with the federal government on these two pieces. And that's what I'm looking for.
Absolutely. And it's been sequenced this way for that reason. We are not granting board approval to Hydro or to Infrastructure Canada or anybody to proceed until council has the final say. And so we can include that as part of the budgeting table process.
Okay.
All the checks and balances are in.
So, Chair, will you note that be placed in the minutes, please? And then I will be okay with those two provisions. Okay, I'll yield the floor for others. Thank you very much. I think this is very exciting. It's certainly not just the environmental benefits that I think are very, very important, but we need to go back to our communities and argue why long-term this is good economics and that the risks which are there can be mitigated over time. So I really appreciate this report before us. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Brockington. Eric, are you fine with making the note that Councillor Brockington has asked for?
I can note that, Chair. I'll confirm in writing with you and Councillor Brockington shortly.
Great, thank you. Okay, so next up is Councillor McKinney, followed by Commissioner Olson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to staff for the report and everyone who worked on it. It's I recognize the work that went into not just writing the report, but how we got here, and it's been a process, but one that I think, you know, when I think back a couple of years ago when we started to discuss electrifying our bus fleet and what that meant, and a lot of the discussion was just how fast things change. And you know, I think that is a testament to where we are today. Things have changed. Things are different today than they were 2 years ago. In terms of the technology, in terms of, you know, what we know about zero emission fleets, and also funding sources, which are key here. So thank you to staff, and the presentation was excellent. Actually, it would be, if we could get a copy of it, I don't know, maybe it's in the shared folder, I think it would be really helpful to be able to answer some of the questions that were asked. I know it's in the report, but it was really clearly laid out. I also was concerned about the, you know, points 5 and 6, recommendations 5 and 6 with delegated authority without reporting back to commission and council. So I just want to clarify. I just want to clarify then that the direction will be that, I guess, we're delegating the authority, of course, to negotiate the financing agreements, but not to enter into an arrangement until it's come back to commission and council. Is that correct? And then the delegated authority would be to go and enter into the agreement.
You're absolutely right, Councillor, and that was implied in the report. We don't have authority to bind council until you approve the budget, because you're putting in the cost of what was then the diesel buses. So this, I'm not concerned about it, because we would bring back a report that says we've achieved everything that was outlined in the report, the budget reflects that, or we had some minor deviation, whatever the case. I can't anticipate what those deviations would be, but we'd give you a report that would say, here are the results of the negotiations, and are there any variations for what was presented in the presentation and the report. You would then approve that, and then it would rise for your budget approval, because it would be embedded in that. And we've been clear with the CIB and with Hydro and with Infrastructure Canada. Staff do not have the authority to bind anybody on this deal until you approve the 2022 budget.
Okay. That's it. That provides me all of the clarity that I need, and the assurance that I think we need as a commission. Just two very quick questions. Well, one is more of a statement. I think that I worry about the review of technologies in just a few years from now. I just don't want this to be held up because we're off looking at things that don't really work. And, you know, when we have a known source of energy, I just want to make sure that, and I want to say it publicly today, that, you know, in 3-4 years from now, we're not going to see that number of new buses purchased go down because we're looking, you know, we're reviewing other technologies. So just more of a statement, really, but if you want to respond to that, that's fine.
We're absolutely aligned. Once you approve the budget and we give you the results of those negotiations, we're going out for procurement on not only the 78, but also we're going to look at economies of scale, and we're going to have options with Will McDonald and the procurement team to say scale up to 450, all sorts of scenarios in there. The constant review of technology is no different than everything else we will do. We will update you. And again, I think right now, knowing what we know, your only other alternative is hydrogen, and there is no large-scale fleet purchasing that's going on in that space. If things change, as we do our annual check-in with you on budget time, we will then give you advice there. But our focus, if you approve this and council approves it, your first purchase of those 74 buses in 2022 will be electric buses.
Okay. I guess I was looking out a little further to the remaining 450. I just don't want to see at any time a stalling, because we're out looking at, you know, the hydrogen fuel cell source. So I'll just leave that, but I hear what you said, and I take comfort in that. Just one quick question on our current buses today. We do on our existing buses, we do have the auxiliary diesel heaters, don't we? So it would be much the same as what we have today for the very coldest days.
I believe so. It would be on all the buses. Right now we use it only on the buses that are stored outdoors. It might be a slightly different model. I think it's contributing a little more to the warmth of the bus, where the current ones are primarily to keep the air brake system warm on the cold nights. So I think it's a little different, but it's very, very much along the same lines.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks, Chair. Thanks, staff. Excellent. Always support this moving forward.
Thank you. Next up, Commissioner Olson, followed by Commissioner Wright Gilbert and Commissioner Caricato.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to state publicly that I have no qualms with going to a zero emissions bus fleet. It may have been speculation in the past. I have no problems with it at all. Just want to make sure it's the right decision that we take, and it makes sense for the people of Ottawa. In that regard, I was a little disappointed that there was no option, if you will, another sort of a counter option That is the cost behind a hydrogen fuel cell were not enunciated. It was just brought up, and the limitations were the cost of the buses and the cost of producing or procuring hydrogen. And Mr. Anconi or Mr. Scrimgeour, I just wonder if you could actually speak to a side-by-side comparison of the two.
I could say a few words about that. There's a number of points of comparison. I think the probably the most germane is that there are as yet no large fleet conversions to hydrogen fuel cell in Canada. It is it remains a future technology where battery electric buses have become a purchasable off the shelf. There are battery electric buses in service, as there will be here later this year. There are battery electric buses in service in a few cities across the country. There's 60 or so running in Toronto. There's, I think Montreal's growing up to 36. Vancouver, Oakville, Winnipeg, Edmonton has a large fleet. Fuel cell buses, hydrogen-fueled fuel cell buses, on the other hand, currently there are none. There have been experimental ones in the past, maybe 15, 20 years ago in Vancouver, maybe 10 years ago in Whistler for the Olympics. There are currently about 18 that have been announced as projects in two municipalities, but they're not in service. They're not tested. They're not proven. That's one comparator. The other comparator is that because there are so few being produced, the costs are thought to be quite high. The next point of comparison is that electricity is available here in Ottawa at, from Hydro Ottawa, relatively straightforward energy source. Hydrogen as a fuel is not available in Ottawa. It would have to be transported in from quite some distance away. It might be, so our recommendation is clearly that battery electric buses are the way to go for this next block of time, and that we should watch the technology and see if either the feasibility, experience, or price changes in future on hydrogen fuel cells.
I would note that there are apparently around the world, there are thousands of fuel cell buses in operation in Asia, in Europe, in the United States. So there must have, I would have imagined there must have been some scope to gain information on their operations. But again, what I don't understand is why we couldn't see an all-in cost of the electric versus the fuel cell. There are advantages, I think you would grant, Mr. Scrimgeour, Mr. Manconi. There are advantages to the hydrogen fuel cell. You certainly don't have the huge transition costs that we would have with electric. So as I say, I'm disappointed that that's not there and that we have less information on which to base a decision. I'm not against going to zero emission, but it's really tough when it's kind of like a take it or leave it approach, which this feels a bit like. But in that regard, I wonder too, by going solely with electric for the next 5 years, and getting a substantial part of the fleet to be electric for the next 5 years, what we're doing is we're almost making it much more difficult to transition out of electric into a new technology, because there would have been so much in sunk costs that getting out of that would be very, very expensive, if not prohibitively so. And in that regard, I wonder, is it possible? Was it possible, or if not, why not, possible to sort of split this purchase, to have at least some hydrogen fuel cells, so you could actually do a comparison on the road?
Councillor, very, very good questions. And I'll start with the hydrogen piece. First off, Canada Infrastructure Bank is agnostic to what zero emission buses any jurisdiction chooses. In other words, they will fund other than electric also if they're zero emissions. But right now, to exactly your point, in Canada, and yes, I mean, even with electric buses and hybrid buses, there's lots of stuff going around the world, but you got to look at the rules and the regulations and the weight restrictions there. The math simply does not work with hydrogen. The savings are not there because of the cost of fuel, the market, the size, availability, and you cannot get the large scale purchase that I doubt very much we'd even be able to get 78 buses or 74 buses. So the math doesn't work there, and I'd be happy to sit down with you and go through some of those pieces with you on that. And again, but we're not closing the door on hydrogen. That may evolve in the future, and that annual check-in with you, we will do that. I speak, I've been in this business over 30 years. I was counting them up the other day. I think I've been through 8 fuels in my career. And the advice that I've always heeded is, don't be bleeding edge, be leading edge. You know, I was part of a group in my early days that pulled out propane tanks out of vehicles because propane didn't save the planet like it was supposed to. I was part of a group that looked at colored diesel and biodiesel and so forth. Going aggressively and doing large scale conversions without proven technology is risky. And yes, this is a big decision before you. So I like the dialogue that I'm hearing today. It's incremental. There's an annual check-in. Does the math work? Does the technology work? How have we de-risked it and so forth? Hydrogen is coming. It's just not there. And I know hydrogen from a reference point where Alstom at the time was talking to us about doing some of the trial tests they did with trains out in Germany. It just wasn't proven at the time. So hydrogen will come. We need to let it evolve. If you're looking after zero emission buses, which is your direction in your council report, your choice right now is electric. The other ones, and trolleys, but trolley have the infrastructure associated with it and so forth, and you need the network. So we're not closing the door on hydrogen forever. At some point, you got to pick a lane and jump in. We're jumping in cautiously. We have given you the risks and we've given you the math associated with those risks, and the hydrogen piece just isn't there right now.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Manconi. Thank you, Mr. Scrimger. Mr. Chair, that's all the questions I have.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. So next up is Commissioner Wright Gilbert, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A lot of my questions have been asked already, so I'll make this really, really brief for once. I just want to confirm that the procurement of the buses is going to be done through an RFP and not sole source through our existing contracts.
It's an open tender.
Yes, love it. Correct. Perfect. Love it. Thank you. And my last question, I know, shocking. I just want to confirm, Hydro Ottawa is going to be responsible for the charging infrastructure, right? So does that mean that they're responsible for maintaining the charging infrastructure as well?
Yes, they are.
Okay, so we'd have to sign some sort of maintenance contract with them.
That's one of the recommendations, yes.
Okay. Just wanted to confirm that. That was my only questions. Shockingly, Mr. Chair, those are all my questions. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner. Next up is Commissioner Caricato, please. Followed by Councillor Eglat.
Thank you. And just following up on my fellow commissioners' questions about the Hydro Ottawa, what do we expect the value of that contract to be, roughly?
Ramo, have you got the numbers handy? I don't have those in front of me, Councillor, but Commissioner Ramo.
Capital terms, I think it's about 200 odd million. It's on that one slide that Mr. Scrivener provided earlier. That doesn't incorporate the annual maintenance cost. The annual maintenance costs are built in to the forecast we prepared as well. But we'd have to pull that number out separately. I don't have that in front of me right now. But it's built into the summary of the total cost that you saw that's on, I think it's slide 43, that shows you the 986 and how it's been broken down. But I'd have to add that up separately. I just don't have that in front of me right now.
Okay. If you could get that and share it with the commission, that'd be great. And I presume it'll be until the end of this cycle, like the contract with Hydro Ottawa will be signed until the end of the life cycle of these buses.
All of the contracts will have to align that way. All of the agreements, the funding right. agreement with the Canadian Infrastructure Bank, the lending agreement with the Canadian Infrastructure Bank, the funding agreement with Infrastructure Canada, and your maintenance agreement with Hydro Ottawa. I would just say the maintenance agreement, you have to think about what you do after the fact, but they're all going to line up roughly in terms of 15-year life cycle of the of the buses that you're purchasing, so you don't have a stranded contract or stranded a component that's stranded and doesn't have a contractual arrangement behind it.
Yeah. Okay, that's great. Now, as you alluded to, there are a lot of kind of contracts that need to be signed and lined up, and we don't have that full assurance right now. What happens if the deal falls apart? Any element of this deal falls apart? Are we just back to diesel, or are we going to revisit? Are we going to look at other options?
Great question. So unless council injects hundreds of millions of dollars into the transit affordability plan, you can't do large-scale conversion. You could do some minor incremental pieces, or if there's any other funding announcements that were to occur. So yes, the pieces need to come together for it to work at this scope and scale and to achieve your council-approved targets.
So if the stacking comes back and, you know, looks like we're ineligible for one of the two, then you'll come back to us with another plan.
We will. But on stacking, I can tell you that the staff level and certainly at the political level, from the founding announcements, everybody believes the stacking rules will be sorted out. There's been a lot of work done on that at the staff level. They understand that needs to be a clear path. And again, that speaks to the check-in that I will, or that my replacement will provide you in December.
Okay, great. Just so that we get an answer today and not after we have these buses, what is coldest days of the year imply? Is it minus 10? Is it minus 20? Like, are these buses going to work no matter what, is what I want to know.
The buses will be specified to work under the same conditions that our current buses are, that they have to work under the complete range of temperatures that we experience in Ottawa, and that'll be from climate data. I believe the number is somewhere around minus 26, minus 27 is the the coldest it gets. So we, in approximate terms, we need a bus that runs between minus 25 and plus 35.
Commissioner, if I could just add to that, I think, the concern is the buses will run. The issue is the battery draw.
Yeah.
To your point. And that's the challenge. The buses will operate. It's just how quickly will it draw on the battery for heat and cooling. And everybody talks about the winter. The summer is just as tough.
Yeah.
And so that's the thing on, back to my opening two slides, all those pieces, how they fit in. And that's why we wanted long range. We didn't want the short range pieces because it just means more stops and more infrastructure and so forth. So for us, the tender will say simple, you same performance as diesel buses in terms of the temperature ranges.
Okay. And then I noted in the report, sort of bulk purchasing, I guess, with Metrolinx or CUTRIC. We haven't yet discussed that today, but I hope that's certainly something on our radar and, in talks with Gatineau and the STO. I don't know if this has come up at all in those discussions, but it's something that I think we should definitely keep our eyes on. Have you had any of those initial discussions with Gatineau? Obviously, pollution is not just in Ottawa, right? And we want to mirror that across the region.
We've done a lot of the procurement pieces, such as work with Metrolinx and so forth. And yes, we will open it up to anybody that's interested through our CUTA relationships if there's an appetite for that. We are a little bit further ahead than others in terms of the scope and scale. And we will do some market sounding to hear what the industry says and recommends also.
Excellent. Well, I'm really pleased to support this plan. Yeah, it's a great step for our city and country and making Ottawa the most green capital in the world. So, good work. I'm done, Chair. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. Next up is Councillor Eglai, please.
Thank you, Chair. When you're this far down on the list, a lot of your questions have been asked. So I want to thank staff for a lot of what they've said so far. Just want to follow up on two issues. One is, again, the discussion just had about winter performance. we experienced certainly the first year we put the train into operation, we had some challenges with winter performance. Most, if not all of them, have been addressed by retrofits and adjustments. But, you know, in that case, we had a product that was tested at the National Research Council saying, you know, this can handle our weather. This can handle the snow and the cold and the freezing rain and everything else. Will part of the procurement process be a requirement that a certain level of testing be carried out and that the proof of that testing or the results of that testing be provided to the city before the city signs on the dotted line and says, this is the product that we want?
In summary, yes. I mean, that speaks to all the due diligence piece on the tendering piece. These buses do go through vigorous testing, and our focus is your focus in terms of year-round performance. And it goes even past just the performance.
Okay, Josh.
We're embedding what the criteria will be for the loan repayment in the event that the buses don't meet, for example, the savings that were projected. So it speaks to exactly this point about performance, savings, and so forth, because it is for 15 years. So the buses have to perform not just really well at the beginning, but throughout the 15 years, the battery replacement program, all those things. So when we talk about a lot of work being done between now and when we're in front of you at budget time, that's some of the due diligence piece that we're talking about. And then I have to give credit to Qtrick and to CUDA and other organizations. They've done a lot of what yourself and what Commissioner Catacato was talking about in terms of the due diligence piece and so forth. And again, on the 40-foot long range, there's a lot of proven and sign-off testing that's already occurred.
And the other quick follow-up is the discussion around hydrogen. Because John, you and I have discussed where we go with the bus fleet several times over the last number of years. And the sense then was you were a booster of hydrogen. You thought that was a good technology. This report is fair to say a pivot from that sort of approach or that sort of position. Heard you talk about cost. Are you satisfied that this is the right direction? Because as one of my colleagues pointed out, we didn't get a side-by-side comparison necessarily or an options sort of approach with the report. So are you satisfied that hydrogen is not the answer today, or for that matter, any other kind of technology, but electric is where we should be going forward? And again, with that proviso that we can adjust as we go forward, as long as we stay within the zero emission targets that we set for you. But are you comfortable, is staff comfortable that hydrogen at this juncture anyway is properly off the table?
So it's not just a John Manconi question. It's to the team, you know, experts from Hydro Ottawa, experts from CIB. By the way, CIB hired an independent firm to do an assessment before they rolled out their loan program. And it spoke to all of these questions about technologies, what zero emission is. I will repeat it again. I was on the call with CIB yesterday confirming that they are not agnostic to the technology. So if hydrogen evolves and it starts to introduce itself in a reliable and cost comparable method, we will be for you talking about that in a structured fashion. So for now, based on all the inputs of financial experts, technical experts, the Dillon report that we did, yes, I am absolutely behind this recommendation. And I'll be candid, if it was not for CIB and Infrastructure Canada, I don't know how you achieve your council-approved policy of getting to zero-emission buses. And at some point, you got to proceed, and we're proceeding in a caution-structured fashion that aligns with all the principles we talked about in the report and the presentation. So absolutely behind the report. Everybody on this team is behind the report, and we're quite proud of it because we think it's actually a model for others to follow.
Just one last question of clarification. So we've been in situations before where we've bought the product that we can afford or the product that we think is most reasonably priced. And we've had some issues arising from that. And again, in that comparison, are you satisfied that it's not just electric for cost, but it's electric for cost plus technology benefits or deficits that we would see with any other kind of model at this point?
It's for all of it, yes.
Okay, thanks very much. Appreciate that.
Okay, next up is Council Menard, please.
Thanks very much, Chair, and thank you to our staff for this report. Wow, I just what a fantastic transition! What a great report too. And I think the risk analysis that you've done and having that up with the mitigation factors, that's something we should be doing almost every report, I think, because that really shows you where we're mitigating. And risks are not a bad thing. That's when you identify risks, that's how you manage them, and that's what you're doing in this instance. Is a very high probability calculated positive risk for this city. The benefits that will come to us as a result of the work that you're putting in now seem apparent. And just a huge congratulations to the staff team for all the work on this, because I know it has been a transition, certainly, and the financial argument may not have been there previously, but with the federal government coming to the table, this makes sense. And, I think you can look at the TTC and what they're doing. They've got, I think it's 60 now, 60 or more electric buses on their roads. And they're also purchasing up another 300 to come in mid-20s, 2020s for them. And so we're going to be a leader, absolutely. But there has been other testing in North America that does show that this does seem to work well. The benefits beyond just the reduction in greenhouse gases are there as well. When you think about the savings on the fuel side, that will be there. The quieter technology on our urban streets and through our residences in both suburban and urban neighborhoods, that is a huge benefit as well. And the transition to this technology is not just, I guess, for Ottawa's own climate goals. This sort of speaks to a broader transition to a bigger modal share in the city towards transit. If you're just thinking about battling the climate problem with electrifying individual personal vehicles, that's not going to do it. And there's a huge, huge transition that has to happen there. This is the solution where you go on the transit side, you have walking, you have the biking and other modal share opportunities for people. It's a combination of those things. And so this is a big part of our plan and the climate plan. I can tell you, when talking with staff on the climate change emergency and our plan that we've put in place now, we wouldn't be able to meet our targets without this. This is a big, big part of that. And there's going to be other offsetting benefits. So I just wanted to say a huge kudos to staff. That was an excellent report. I read through the other compendium pieces as well that have been previously produced and other municipalities. This is a big deal. And should be congratulated on it. So thank you for what you've done. I'm so happy to see that grant piece as well. Just going with the CIB on their interest for the loan, I don't think makes sense. So that grant is so important to combine with that other piece. So I'd love to see this, and thank you again for all your hard work on this.
Thank you, Council Menard. I just have one question for you, Mr. Manconi, if you could address this for me, please. I want to get some assurance for the residents of Kanata, Stittsville, and Barrhaven that reaching this deal with the federal government in no way jeopardizes the plans for phase three of LRT.
Chair, absolutely. So the beauty of this plan, because of the funding from our partners, is it keeps you whole. So we were very candid up front. What we had to contribute was the cost of diesel buses. We were not going to start mining into the transit affordability plan or any of the other capital account. So Wendy can confirm that, but you are kept whole in terms of your current transit affordability plan. Wendy, did you want to comment on that?
Thanks, John. Yeah, that's absolutely correct. Councillor, we're living within the long-range financial plan. So basically what we have set aside in terms of that 30-year outlook for our investment today that we're putting in diesel, we will then put it towards electric buses. All the supplemental funds will come from the CIB as well as the grant to basically take care of that gap. And then if we have savings, we're paying back that loan through our savings. And as Mr. Manconi said, the only way we could do it was through this funding with the CIB and the Infrastructure Canada grant.
Okay, thank you very much, both of you. Okay, so is this report received or approved? Carried, I guess.
Carried.
Carried.
Okay, thank you. So now moving on to item number four, the operating capital budget for Q1 Transit Commission. I believe Commissioner Wright Gilbert held that.
Yes, it's not going to be a long set of questions, everyone, so you'll get to your lunches, I promise. So I kind of want to understand the surplus, right? So there's a surplus result of the Safe Restart funding from the federal government. There's a surplus of, I think it's $3.138 million. And so I just kind of want to understand, what's the go forward plan with respect to this surplus, and do we expect any additional funding? I believe Ms. Stephenson said that we're essentially whole until the end of the year in terms of our funding. So I just kind of want to understand what we're doing with this surplus and what's the sort of the go forward plan.
Well, thank you very much, Commissioner Wright Gilbert. So I think there's a distinction that I'll make here in terms of where we're at for quarter one. So on the COVID side, we are whole because we have received funding through the Safe Restart Agreement, which means we have no COVID deficit as a result of what's happened. On the non-COVID side, we have a small surplus of $3.1 million, and that is largely related to, I'm going to say, a staffing or compensation costs. Our plan, as we always do, we will come back to you in quarter two with an outlook as to where we're at, and that outlook will include quarter two as well as year end. So I can't say at this point what's going to happen with that surplus, but as I had noted previously, when we had looked at our projection back in February in terms of having enough funding, there was a bit of a gap there, and then as things improve, we will be able to fill that gap ourselves.
Thank you for clarifying that. Money stuff is not my forte, so I always appreciate it when someone can sort of explain it to me in layman's terms. I guess my follow-up is that, so at previous Transit Commission meetings, I think it was back in February or March, we approved some service, well, there was some debate around what we were going to call them, adjustments, I think we agreed on, to save about $5 million. We now have a surplus of $3.1 million, or just over that. And so I suppose my question is that savings of $5 million, is that surplus sort of part of that $5 million savings, or did it, I guess I'm not asking this properly, but essentially, like, did we make those changes too soon? Did we make those adjustments, those cuts too soon, given that we now have a surplus situation?
So Councillor, no, I understand your question.
Thank you.
No, we didn't make those cuts too soon. Remember, you had plan A, plan B, and
yep.
plan C.
Yeah.
And we're trying to avoid you having to get into plan B, which was gut another $30 million out of your capital program. And you saw the importance of that today. And plan C was the drastic, remember we brought you the criteria for deep, deep cuts. So the $3 million right now, that's staff taking care of every nickel and dime they can. The June changes, which are rolling out, you've seen the PSAs on that, get you $5 million in cost reductions. We have a long way to go to get to the end of the year because we don't know where ridership is going, right, in terms of all the changes. So it's conservative. It's absolutely the right move. And then what you have waiting in 2022 is that if ridership does not pick up, your $5 million gets annualized and it goes up to about $11 million. So we were trying to give you every tool to avoid massive, deep, deep cuts rather than these adjustments in June. So we think it's absolutely the right thing. We're pleased we're in a surplus. Again, the envy of many. You've done all that without massive cuts. And hopefully ridership picks up. And as we said in the report, if things turn quickly, I mean, when Ms. Stephenson and I talk weekly, if we see ridership accelerating and revenues catching up and we have to back off and add service, we can always add service in Q4. I doubt that's where we're going to be, but we also doubt we're going to have to do any more deep adjustments because we've been very cautious in our moves. I don't know if that answers the question.
No, it does. And thank you for understanding my question, because I apparently lost the ability to speak the English language through part of it. So I appreciate
you understanding and speaking, Sarah. So, those are all my questions. I really just wanted to understand this surplus situation and was concerned that we'd made these cuts perhaps a bit too soon. But I feel comfortable with the path that we've taken. So thank you very much for that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Great, thank you. So now, Commission, is that report received?
Received.
Thank you. Okay, next up is we have no in-camera items. Is there any notice of motions? No? Okay, any inquiries? We've received no written inquiries. Councilor McKinney?
I have one, Chair, if you don't mind. Sorry for not sending it ahead.
Okay.
Thank you. On June 4th, 2021, the city manager informed the council that a recruitment process will begin for a new general manager of transit services department.
Okay, Councilor McKinney, I'm just going to stop you right there. We're not dealing with that at the Transit Commission, as you know. You probably know better than all of us that I falls do. Under the city manager's purview. So mm-hmm. It's not a question for the Transit Commission. There's not going to be anything coming out to do with that process here. Okay.
I'll bring it to council then.
Okay. Halfway. Thank you. Okay. Any other inquiries, folks? All right. No other business. The meeting's adjourned. If we can do a motion for adjournment, Vice Chair.
That the proceedings of the Transit Commission meeting of June 16th, 2021 be adjourned.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. The next regular meeting will be scheduled for September 15th, 2021, and the media availability will start at 12:45 in 15 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.